that's one of the things about religion that we have to remember when we're talking about that makes it such a hot topic issue is because we're talking about law. Who gets to be God? Who gets to be God's deputies? Who is the Most High? Who is the divine authority? It's all about the claim to the Most High. The only way that somebody can be higher than us is if we give away our power. Because there's nobody. We're all equal. But we're not equal in our knowledge. So ultimately, I think it does have to be a hierarchy, but it has to be a cooperative hierarchy, like a bee colony. It's about what our value system is, what we care about.
Good to go.
Hello, Hive Mind. Today is March 15th, 2021. I'm your host, Nate Kapp, joined by co-host Brandon Martin. Welcome to the 43rd Cubbyhole Podcast, where important topics are unveiled, discussed, and tested. Our website is cubbyhole.com. That's CubbyHole.com. As of now, this show comes out every Friday at 12 p.m. Pacific time. And please make sure to start at podcast number one if this is your first time hearing this show. Hey, Brandon.
Howdy, Nate.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Doing good, man. Thanks for coming on the show. And this is going to be pretty awesome.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to the show since we started the whole Cubbyhole podcast. So, very exciting.
Today we have a really special guest on the show, and this person has gone great lengths to not only learn much of the most crucial knowledge known to man, but then he has processed that information and willfully gifted the whole world with an incredible, synthesized, easy-to-access tapestry of that knowledge for the purpose of truth and freedom. Much of this man's work consists of the occult, natural law, consciousness, mind control, symbolism, spirituality, and much more. Mark Passio's magnum opus can be found in many places on the internet, but specifically on his website, whatonearthishappening.com, where you can find his radio/podcast show, What on Earth is Happening, and it is a gold mine of knowledge, to say the least. And I'm going to speak on behalf of a few people here, Douglas, Brandon, my mother Indica, and I. We really, really appreciate your ambitious, tenacious will to generate such scholarly spiritual work. It's a true honor, Mark. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Nate, Brandon, thank you so much for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here on the Cubbyhole podcast.
Awesome, man. This is going to be a really, really awesome show. So, the topics for today are chaos sorcery and especially the season of sacrifice. And not only the timing of this show is so spot on, but I couldn't think of anyone more versed on these topics than Mark. So it's going to be a really extraordinary show. And I know I've already said this, but I recommend that anyone listening to this show for the first time should start at podcast number one. All right, Mark, Brandon and I would like to start out with the question, what is the season of sacrifice?
Well, that's a great question, and a lot of people who may not be too familiar with the world of the occult, especially the world of dark occultism, may have no prerequisite background knowledge when it comes to this type of a topic. What is referred to in dark occultism as the season of sacrifice is a 40-day time period. It's an approximate 40-day time period, starting at the beginning of the season of spring and ending at mid-spring on May 1st. So there is some small amount of debate about when the season of sacrifice actually begins. And I've tried to clarify that by saying that in earnest, it begins on the spring equinox. And that usually floats between around March 20th to 22nd. But there's usually a countdown. If it's around, if we take March 22nd as the spring equinox, 3/22, and we have a countdown, there's a 3-day countdown to when this season of sacrifice actually begins. So I say that the actual first day of the season of sacrifice is March 19th. Now, March 19th is a hugely special day in the world of the occult, especially dark occultism, Satanism, etc. Many people will also recognize, March 19th. It's a day when essentially Satanists appoint people in their organizations. Okay, this is the day that I was appointed as a priest in the Church of Satan, when appointments were made, and this is the day that they would do this every single year. It's like a reference to like resurrection, but it's like resurrection into their class, into their priest class. You know, there's a 3-day period of death and resurrection biblically in the New Testament, right? So after Good Friday, there's a 3-day period, then Easter Sunday is 3 days later, signifying the resurrection of Christ. They have it in the opposite sense of the resurrection of what they would call the black sun, the dark sun, okay? So March 19th, the sun is actually still just below the equatorial point, and it's just getting ready to break from the southern hemisphere into the northern hemisphere. So they have this 3-day countdown when the sun is finally fully, completely past the equatorial zero point, as it's coming back up northward because of the, Earth's tilt with respect to the axis of rotation that it goes around the sun. If we understand that, you know, astrotheologically, that we're looking at really the point that the sun emerges from its tomb, okay? This is a dark occult symbolic aspect or ritualistic aspect, if you will, where they're basically paying homage to what they consider the dark sun, the black sun, which is knowledge wielded as a weapon. Okay, so they take this 3-day period as a preparatory, period coming into the beginning of spring, and then a 40-day period until the midpoint of spring, ending at May 1st. May 1st, another significant occult holiday, Sabbat, special day on the occult calendar, being Beltane, or as it's called in Satanism, Walpurgisnacht, Saint Walpurgis's night. And what that day represents is, fertility rites, giving thanks that the spring, warm weather finally emerging is going to produce a bountiful harvest that will get people through the season of death, which is, fall and winter, where food does not grow as abundantly. So, the beginning to midpoint of spring is seen as the point where sacrifices should be made to the sun and the earth. And again, these are ancient, obviously pagan / non-Christian rituals and beliefs. They are really widely adopted by dark occultists because they take it very literally that blood should be spilled. See, it isn't just about, sacrificing to do the work, to put the seeds into the ground. We're not talking about sacrifice like that. The hard work that it takes to plant and cultivate, crops for a harvest to come later, to sustain people through the winter period. They literally believe in the dark occult of that the sun and the earth are entities that can only be appeased by bloodletting, by blood spilling onto the earth. It's a twisted form of ancient pagan rituals and beliefs regarding the beginning of spring. And they take it in a literal sense to mean that in order to ensure a bountiful harvest so that people survive the winter months, that they have to actually initiate a blood sacrifice during the initial, the first half of the spring season. It's a crazy, sick, twisted belief, but many of them happen to believe in it very literally. And again, as we realize, we don't have to believe in these people's rituals. They are powerful entities. They are people who are really running the world because of the amount of wealth and power that they have currently amassed. And we don't have to believe in what they believe. They are acting upon it. They believe in it. They are acting upon it. I liken the world of the occult to any other religion where you don't need to believe in somebody's deranged religious beliefs for it to have an impact in your life. You know, people who want to go and, bomb an abortion clinic because they're radical Christians can have an effect on other innocent bystanders, you know. So for people to constantly bring out this argument, I don't believe what they believe, so it doesn't affect me, is complete nonsense. Other people's crazy beliefs definitely do affect third parties that don't believe in their beliefs. It's just a logical, you know, fact of the matter. So the season of sacrifice is a 40-day period starting at March 19th and proceeding to May 1st, where dark occultists and Satanists and dark Luciferians, people who have twisted occult belief systems throughout the ages for their benefit, for their goals and aims, actually conduct human blood sacrifice rituals during that 40-day time period. And often on a grand public stage. This is not just done privately. This is done publicly on the grand world stage to inject not only their dark, negative, energetic, energy into the world, the dark aspect of energy that they want to pump into the etheric plane and the etheric field of the world. But they are doing this to pump fear into the population, to make the population insanely afraid of, what might happen, what might occur. You know, so these are what I refer to as acts of chaos sorcery. Again, that was one of the topics that was brought up earlier. This is what I refer to these acts that they perform during this season of sacrifice time period as acts of chaos sorcery. They are following what is known as traditionally the Hegelian dialectic. It's a synthesis meets antithesis to produce a synthesis. So it's problem, reaction, solution, as it has been called by other researchers, namely David Icke, to create an outcome that they want. They're creating a massive problem in the form of some life-taking event, some event that takes mass life, that is organized, that is staged, that is completely orchestrated in advance, well in advance. And then they carry out that event to spill blood onto the earth for the season of sacrifice. And then what this does is this creates an outcry in the human community to say, look at the tragedy that has happened. Something has to be done about this. And human beings then often or almost always say government should do something about this. And that's the very people who are in, you know, the very people who are in control of government are these dark occultists that I'm referring to. So they're all too happy to oblige and then to institute their pre-planned solution after they get the fearful reaction that they want. That's how chaos sorcery in the world works. And often, not all the time, but often these events happen during this 40-day time period called the occult, the dark occult season of sacrifice.
Wow, that's a lot to take in right there. I have many questions. I want to talk about, you know, this past event, but the first thing I want to really ask is what, you know, you have a dark background that, you know, maybe the listeners of this show aren't familiar with. What is it that drives someone to become a person that wants to, you know, do these sacrifices? Is that something you can answer? Is that something you know?
I would say it's probably, you know, a very ancient part of their familial lineage. What drives anybody to get up, believe in, whatever beliefs that organized religious institutions put forward, and then go to religious ceremonies on their day of worship every week. You know, we could ask the same question of that. You know, why does a Muslim get up and go to mosque weekly? Why does a Jew get up and go to synagogue? Why does a Christian get up and go to church? It's because they've been inculcated and indoctrinated with the religious beliefs of that particular cultural influence, religiously. You know, these have come down to them familial, in a familial capacity. Through their lineage, through, you know, their parental lineage for, you know, hundreds or thousands of years. And they carry them out because that tradition has just been passed down. It's the same thing with Satanism, with dark occultism. This is an ancient religion. As a matter of fact, the only name that they refer to it as themselves is the old religion. They don't call their belief system Satanism. They don't call it Luciferianism. You know, they refer to it simply as the old religion, if they refer to it at all. You know, I've said many times that this is a cult without a name. They don't have a name for their belief system, really. It's not, you know, called one thing. Like, it's not like an organization. You know, it's a worldwide network. It's a worldwide network that does have somewhat of a structure and a hierarchy to it. But it is not one simplified organization to which they refer to. You know, some people refer to it as the establishment, you know, like Carol Quigley called it the Anglo-American establishment. He also referred to it as the Society of the Elect. But in his books, he made very certain to tell people that that is not what they refer to it as. These are just names that he gave it because since the organization, since the network that they operate out of does not actually have an official name, he had to give it a name himself just to refer to it throughout his book. So he called it the Society of the Elect. Some people refer to it as the Illuminati. I personally don't like that name because it means illuminated, and these people aren't illuminated or enlightened. They're sick. They're sick psychopaths, you know. So why refer to them as the illuminated? They're not the illuminated of anything, you know. They're right. they're very, very dark. They're very completely, the light has not reached them. They don't have the light. They claim that they have the light because they have knowledge. Just having knowledge doesn't mean you have, quote, the light, capital L, you know. That means you're doing the right thing with the knowledge, you know. It implies that you have wisdom. And they don't have a drop of wisdom. All they have is will and information that other people lack. And that doesn't make you enlightened, you know. To have a bunch of willpower and not have one, you know, speck of true care, of heart-based intelligence, it doesn't make you illuminated. It doesn't make you have the light. It makes you a psychopath, you know, and that's what these people are. You know, so I would say that once this bloodline cult in the very ancient world, probably tens of thousands of years ago, seized power because of what the knowledge was that they possessed, which is namely how the human psyche works and operates, and just about every aspect, every knowledgeable aspect of the human psyche and how it works, in addition to having the real laws of nature at their understanding, meaning that they studied true science, not science in the form that it comes down to us in the modern day as government-funded, you know, grant-funded science that is all funded by government and institutions that present grants to scientists, and it's all money-driven. They understood the real natural sciences and now held all of that information very tightly to their chest for thousands upon thousands of years. When that knowledge differential developed over the ages into the power differential that we see in our world today between those who have that knowledge and those who do not, I would say these are the progenitors of those bloodlines that had that knowledge thousands and thousands of years ago. And now they come down to us in the modern world as what I refer to as the dark occultists, the people who their bloodlines had that knowledge and now they carried it down to them. Over the generations, held it very tightly to their chest, tried to make sure no one else had it so they couldn't wrest power away from them, and so that they remained in the darkness of ignorance and were easily manipulable and easy to control. And I would say today the biggest expressions of them are not only in formal religious institutions such as the Vatican, secret societies that surround that, Of course, you know, what we would consider secret societies, you know, like Masonic institutions, Rosicrucian institutions, etc., except the dark side of those institutions. There's always two sides to any schools of occultism, the dark and the light, depending on how that knowledge is used. And then, of course, it comes down to them in the form of the modern secular institutions, such as banking institutions, political institutions, and of course, think tanks, you know, supranational entities. One of the biggest ways that it operates is in intelligence agencies. Modern intelligence agencies, I would say, are some of the biggest schools of dark occultism in the modern world. That is how this religion expresses in the world, and their ranks are filled with dark occultists, filled with them. You know, so that is the form that it comes down to us in the modern world. But to go back to your original question of why do they think like this? Well, you know, when people are drunk with power because they're the ones who have had knowledge about how just about anything of any importance works, you know, over time, that's going to lead them, because they're not enlightened and they're not based in heart-based intelligence, and their family bloodlines were obsessed with keeping the power that they had developed, it's just going to lead them to continue to use it as a weapon over other people. They're not interested in teaching others. You know, they're not interested in having the playing field between them and others leveled by other people knowing what they know. They're already in an egotistical, ego-driven mindset, you know, somewhat psychopathic mindset to begin with. Because this power, you know, has made them, you know, this knowledge has made them drunk with power. So, you know, what leads them to go into this, you know, really crazy belief system is they have never even had to face a challenge in their entire lives. They've always had all the knowledge they could ever need. They've always had all the resources that they could ever need. And they're, quite frankly, bored with the result. You know, you look at a person who has every single resource that they could possibly ever have always provided and have never had to work for it. Imagine that situation. Imagine a person never had to work a day in their lives to accrue what they really have. Their money makes money for them because that was given to them institutionally in their family, you know, bloodlines that just came down to them through inheritance. And they have all the money that they could possibly ever spend, and infinitely more. They start basically toying with people. They start looking at people as toys to be, you know, batted around and played with. You know, they can basically buy anybody that they want because most people have a price to do anything that somebody else wants them to do. You know, most people won't say no if enough money is flaunted in front of their face. These people can get people to pretty much do anything they say. These people can buy anything that they want. They can go anywhere that they want. They can travel endlessly, never run out of money. You know, they can have whatever possessions they desire at any given time. They can make people do whatever they want because all they got to do is whip out enough cash and the people will say, how high do you want me to jump? And eventually that becomes boring. Eventually they see life as zero challenge. All just given to them for free, you know? So what they eventually start to want is they start wanting control. So that's how this develops. This whole mindset and mind frame develops because they don't want things or situations anymore. They want control of others. So that becomes the challenge to them. How much can I control? How much can I be seen as an authority figure or somebody who owns someone else? Because this is seen as forbidden. Right. And then you could look at all the different ways that control can manifest itself. Well, you know, rape is a huge form of control. You know, it's violence. It's not just sexual aberration. It's not aberration. It's criminal activity. Right. So they want to be able to get away with things that the normal person can't get away with because they're more closely watched or they're more closely controlled because they don't have the amount of money that they have. They have the amount of money to pay off entire police forces to say an event never occurred. And every single one of those cops will do it because they don't have real conscience. You know, you whip out enough money to an entire police force and they'll be like, what crime? I don't even know what you're talking about. What happened? You know, 100% of them as well. And people think that that's not the case. It's definitely the case, you know? And that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about that much wealth. We're talking about that much power, that much influence. You know, people say, oh, somebody like the Queen of England doesn't have that much real worldly political power. You if you're sitting on a $20 trillion, you know, resource, $20 trillion of resources, at least minimum, low ball estimate. No, that doesn't give you any power over others. You don't have any power in the world with $20 trillion of wealth. No, you can't do anything with that. I mean, you can barely, you know, buy a pack of gum with that kind of wealth, you know, let alone influence other people, let alone buy whole institutions, let alone buy whole police forces. Yeah. You know, I mean, people are just so naive. You know, it's partly because they've never even imagine themselves in such a situation, right? The part of the reason people can't even imagine how bad the world is in the modern day is because they really don't have that psychopath inside of them. And I've talked about this in other interviews. Unless someone has the dark side within them, they don't really have the light side within them. And I know that's a very controversial statement to make, and there's a lot of people who would insist that it's the exact other way, that you never need that dark side, that you should never even look at that dark side, and that you only need to look at the light, and nothing could be further from the truth. If you don't actually have that dark side within you, you can't recognize it and understand when it's present in others. And therefore, right. You can't really understand the world, because people who have that dark side fully expressed in them as a complete psychopathic entity are running the world. And that's why people in the New Age movement don't understand how the world is run. They have no clue about what the real world is like. No clue. No clue about how this world is really run. Nothing works the way they think it works. And they're all sitting in a shell, hiding, you know, it's the see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. You know, they just have their hands over their eyes, ears, and mouth. And they think they're enlightened. They think they're getting spiritual enlightenment. And nothing could be further from the truth, because if you don't understand how the dark side works, you don't understand how the light side works. That's just exactly how it is, you know. So, you know, you put yourself in the position of these people. They've had all the wealth in the world, never had to work for it a day in their lives, are bored with being able to have any possession, go anywhere they want, have any amount of wealth that they want, have sex with whoever they want because they could either attract them or pay them off, buy off anybody they want. Pretty much then it becomes, now I want to do whatever crimes I want. Now I want to control other people and I want to become a criminal that can get away with it just because of the amount of wealth I have. That's where it distorts, and that's what it turns into over long periods of time of not being challenged. When human beings don't have any challenges in their lives, they start to often, unless they're already truly a moral person because of what they have learned, they often go into a state of complete moral decay. And that's what has happened with these ancient bloodlines that come down to us in the form of the dark, you know, occultists and secret societies of today. They basically had no challenges in the past, and their ancestors had no challenges, because this is a generational passing down of wealth and power. And it eventually gets more and more distorted and twisted mentally and psychologically and emotionally until it becomes, I want to rule over people. I want to be their God. I want to be their king. I want to be their God. And I want to commit whatever crimes that I want to commit completely unchallenged and with impunity, because I could pay off whoever I need to pay off to get away with it. That is where they come down from. And that is ultimately their mindset.
Do you believe the season of sacrifice has anything to do with the corona pandemic?
Well, I think they brought it out early on, just before the official beginning, about a week before, and I think all the death that occurred with the ventilators that they did last year, putting people that didn't need to be on ventilators to kill them, was part of the season of sacrifice. That whole plan was part of it, because that's when you saw the most massive death take place during the original coronavirus alleged outbreak. If we get into it, it's not even really what they're saying that it is. And it's generally a fabrication to create more fear. I'm not saying that people don't get ill from what we would consider diseases, but, you know, I consider that it's toxicity that they have taken in. as opposed to contagion, as the germ theory postulates. But setting that aside for a moment, if you just look at the death count, the major death that occurred during the last year was during the season of sacrifice. It's totally incontrovertible that that is the case. You look at where the major death spike happened, and it was last year, right around April, which is when they love to do this type of stuff. April is their big month. Sometimes they get it going early in the season. Sometimes they wait till the very end, May 1st, but April seems to be the biggest time period, especially around mid-April, especially around April 19th. April 19th and 20th are the days that you really have to be especially watchful, especially vigilant, because April 19th was the first the day that is commemorated as the opening shots of the American Revolution at Lexington and Concord in Massachusetts. And one of the biggest, aspects of the dark occult is the royalty of Europe, especially the crown of England. And, the royal family of England vowed eternal revenge against the colonists for the beginning of the American Revolution and having to spend the resources to send their henchmen, over an ocean to go wage war on another continent. And also, basically making them look bad that they, didn't press that war to its completion because of the costliness and life that it would have cost to keep sending troops over an ocean. And they just vowed eternal vengeance was the vow that was made by the king at the time, George III. And he said, my ancestry will continuously wage vengeance against America, and they have, it's a reference to the coronavirus, the crown, right? It means the crown. Corona means crown. Okay.
Right.
So, just that right there is showing you how symbolically they like to do things. This is all about, the royalty that thinks that they're God, the secret societies that think that they're God, the intelligence agencies that think that they're God. I've said many times that the problem that we are up against in the world are psychopaths who think they're God. They believe that there are gods. They believe there are owners and are gods. And that's what authority is. Authority is you have no right to challenge me because I am better than you. That's what royalty is. That's what government is. That's what tyranny is. That's what any authority figure is saying, you have to obey me just because I'm me and you're you. That's it. If there's any, psychopathic power differential, that's it. These are people that just believe they have authority vested in them and they're just better than other people. And they could tell them to do whatever they want and make them do whatever they want. And if they don't want to follow, they'll do violence to them. If they don't want to agree and they don't want to comply, then they'll just pay henchmen to do violence to them. And that's all the police and military are. Henchmen paid to do violence to people who don't want to comply with the ruling class's commands. That's all they are. It's all they ever have been.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the fact that people still can't see it. The fact that people still can't see it and still go into these institutions is unfathomable to me, simply unfathomable. They will go and do violence to others for a paycheck thinking that they're the good guys. They're not the good guys. They're people who are henchmen, criminal thugs doing the bidding of the psychopathic elitists who believe that there are gods. And that's all those institutions ever have been. And people want to believe that somehow these people are doing something honorable or heroic or noble. No, they're not. They're following the orders of psychopathic lunatics for a paycheck. There's nothing honorable or noble in that. If you want to do something honorable or noble, learn objective morality and teach it to other people and don't go into psychopathic institutions that are serving the ruling class. There's nothing honorable in that.
Agreed.
It doesn't show your courage either. There's nothing courageous in it. Often these are some of the most non-courageous, absolutely cowardly people, and I'll say it right to their face, that doesn't matter to me, These people don't have an ounce of courage in them because they're not standing up to the people who are really running the world and are the real criminals of our society. Those they won't touch because they're paid not to touch them. But hey, oh my God, forbid if somebody sells loose cigarettes on a New York City street corner, then strangle them to death. You know, that's the whole MO of the entire police force everywhere. You know, there's a law for them and there's a law for everybody else. You know, there's a law for the elite, so-called, and then there's a law for the average person, you know?
So, yeah, I tend to refer to the order followers as the bane of freedom.
That's it.
Because of exactly what you're talking about.
Exactly. Yep. And just think about this. The real problem with the world isn't this religion, isn't this psychopathic, lunatic, dark occult religion that I refer to as the cult of the Black Sun, or people refer to as the Illuminati. It doesn't matter what you call them. They're garbage souls that haven't developed any amount of true intelligence within them over their whole soul lifetime. Okay? That's all they are. Let's call them what they are. They're the garbage of humanity. That's all it is. They're sewage. Okay? The real problem is not that sewage currently runs humanity. The real problem is the people who say that they're good people listen to and follow sewage. That's the real problem, right? So the real problem is how many people in the world that this total garbage of humanity, this so-called elite class that is actually the bottom of a garbage barrel, okay, pulls out a bunch of cash and says, "You do this, do my bidding, and this is how much will go into your bank account." Okay, that they tell them, "I'll transmit this much money into your bank account on a monthly basis." The question is not, what do we have to do to fight this ruling class? The question is, what do we have to do to stop doing their bidding for money? Because how many people, the question people really need to ask and answer it honestly, how many people would not do an immoral task if asked to do it by one of these sick psychopathic Satanists, okay? If enough money were transferred into their bank account on a monthly or weekly basis, right? So if $100 million were going to be transferred into some people's bank account each week, right? $100 million a week was your pay to go and do whatever these people tell you to do. The question isn't how many people would do it. The question is how many people would not do it. How few people do you think would not do it for type of money like that? Hardly anybody is the answer.
I don't know anybody that would personally.
Any
very
human being on earth.
Yeah.
And guess what? That is the problem. That is the problem. See, we have to convince people to stop doing what they're doing, even though it will benefit them tremendously financially from doing it. That's
right.
Why the one great work is as hard as it is, because it's not just a matter of getting people to accept what right and wrong is, because many of these people know what the difference between right and wrong is and don't care, because too much money is entering their bank account on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, for them to say, "I care enough to stand up for what is right." So they're not really good people, you know? And this is all the paid henchmen are. They're not good people because they're saying, "My pension means more to me than what's true. My pension means more to me than being asked to be a person who enacts tyranny on other people. My pension means more to me, or my weekly paycheck means more to me than, doing the right thing. Than actually standing up to evil, than actually standing up to bad people." You're not standing up to bad people. You are bad people. The people who are members of the police and military, you're not standing up to the bad people of the world. You are doing the bidding of the bad people of the world, and you are one of the bad people of the world because you take a paycheck from those people to go out and do bad things to good people. You're preventing good people from exercising their rights. You know, and you're letting people who have no right to do what they're doing get away with criminal behavior. You know, that's not a good person. That's a complicit criminal. That's a person who is also a criminal in conspiracy with a higher level criminal, taking a paycheck from them, taking resources from them to cover up their crimes and to do their bidding, which is also criminal. And the fact that people do not know this in the year 2021 is so deplorable and sickening to my stomach that it shows how naive and totally ignorant and dumb the vast majority of humanity is. Just and it has to be said bluntly and flatly like that. It's a shame, but it's also the case. It's also true, you know, that they so have their fingers in their ears and don't want to hear the truth. You know, that people like this get up on a daily basis and go to a job where it is their job to essentially protect and cover up the crimes of psychopaths and pedophiles. And they go and do that job on a daily basis and then proclaim in the next breath, I'm a good person. No, you've sacrificed the good part of yourself for mammon. See, that's also part of the quote sacrifice. That's also part of the continuous creation and, you know, propagation of chaos, is they have to get people to sacrifice the good within them. That's the biggest sacrifice ritual of all. You know, that's why they call their sacrifice ritual at Bohemian Grove the cremation of care, right? Because that's what ultimately they're doing, is they're killing the heart-based intelligence, the care within the individuals, to just do whatever they're going to do to other people for a paycheck and crush and kill and murder their conscience. Immolate their conscience, the cremation of care. That means the burning away of conscience. That's what the ritual at Bohemian Grove in California, you know, Southern California, that's what it means. You know, that's ritualistically what they are doing. And it comes out of an ancient Carthaginian sacrifice ritual called Moloch ritual. The Moloch ritual was a making of in effigy of the god Molech. In the ancient, you know, Babylonian slash, you know, and then later into the Canaanite, you know, ritual tradition, this huge wooden effigy, in which then the people of the Carthaginian culture would place some of their firstborn. Each one of these wooden effigies would often have 2 to 3 pits built within them, inside of them, that would be burnt up like a huge oven as the huge statue effigy was burnt, was set ablaze. And, you know, you could look up this ritual. It's called the Moloch ritual, M-O-L-O-C-K. The god that these firstborn infants were offered to in ritual sacrifice, in ritual immolation, was Molech, M-O-L-E-C-H, and Molech is actually named in the Bible in several places. You know, this was a well-known sacrifice ritual back, you know, around 2,000 years ago or more, and you know, they carry it down today as the cremation of care. You know, it's done in an effigy, you know, similar to Molech, you know, is placed out on this riverbank. And then an effigy of a small male child known as Care, because Care is actually action, you know. So it's a small male child. Care gives birth to action, you know, in the world, gives birth to right action. So heart-based intelligence eventually births right action in the world. And so they are, you know, ritualistically, symbolically burning up an effigy of the child known that they call dull care. You know, they're mocking it. You know, oh, this is dull. You don't need this. You know, this creates no excitement in your life. You know, this is just dull and can be done away with. It's unneeded. It can be just tossed aside, when in fact, what it really represents is heart-based intelligence and care energy of the heart, you know, caring about, you know, having conscience and caring about what your actions do to others. You know, and they're ritualistically immolating that. And I would say there's probably a real ritual taking place, you know, in the woods behind the scenes at real sacrificial altars that they have built, that there are many images of, that certain people who were, you know, members went, you know, in the background behind that statue of the owl of Bohemia, as they refer to it, which is a ritual symbol of Molech, the god Molech. And, you know, many people have actually taken photos of the sacrificial altars that they have further back, you know, in the redwoods at that location. So this is another aspect of, you know, ritualistic chaos sorcery. They're getting people to participate in the destruction of their own care. And, you know, it happens at a lower level. That's where it's, I guess, done up with ritual and trappings, you know, but this happens on a daily basis. Happens on a daily basis with people accepting the paycheck that they accept on a daily basis. They are basically immolating their heart for the god Mammon. You know, it's no different. You know, they're just being basically saying, I know that it's wrong. I don't care that it's wrong. All I care about is me, and I'm going to do this for a paycheck. And there's no better example of Satanism than that. You know, Satanism is that. You know, Satanism is, I don't care about anybody but me. As long as I'm taken care of, screw what happens to anybody else. I don't care. You know, that's Satanism. And how many people think like that? How many people on a daily basis, that's their whole thought process from the minute they wake up till the minute they go to sleep at night, is I'm going to be out for myself. I don't really care about what happens to anybody else. I'd say it's almost all of humanity. I would say it's over 97% of humanity. If 3% of people are not like that, it's an amazing accomplishment at this point. Okay. That's the numbers that I would put it at. And if we can't continue to go on like that and expect that things are going to change, we can't continue to go on being people who are that selfish and self-centered and thinking that we're not serving Satanism. That's exactly what Satanism is. By my definition and standards, 97% of humanity have been inculcated into the religion of Satanism. They just don't know what it is. They think that that's just pure selfishness, or that's just out for self-interest. No, that's the religion of Satanism that you have been secretly indoctrinated and inculcated into participation in, you know, into being a member of that cult. You know, most of the people on the street that you walk by are members of the cult of Satanism, but they themselves don't know it. And not like they're professing that they're going to worship Satan or anything. I'm not even talking about an entity that people believe in. I'm talking about a way of life, a way of being in the world. Satanism is not the worship of anything. Okay. And people out there who are of religious persuasions will insist that I'm wrong. I'm not wrong. I was a priest in Satanism. Okay, I was a priest in the Church of Satan. I know what the religion is, or I wouldn't have been made clergy of it, right? Were you clergy of a religion? Were you actual appointed clergy in an organized, recognized religion that is a recognized religion? This is actual charter religion. It's in the United States Charter of Religions, okay? So to anybody listening and saying, I don't know what I'm talking about Satanism, which is always a considerable amount of people who think when they've had zero involvement in it, they know more about it than I do. When I was clergy in the religion, just think about that. That is how totally hard-headed people are. That is how totally egotistical people are when it comes to rejection of knowledge from firsthand experience. I see comments and people saying all day long, Mark Passio doesn't know what he's talking about Satanism. That's not what Satanism is. And then I'll ask them in the next breath, were you clergy in a religious organization that was a satanic organization? That was espousing the satanic religion? And they're like, no, I was never anything like that in my life. And then I'll say, well, I was a priest. I was clergy in the religion of Satanism. You were not. So what qualifies you to say you know more about what the religion of Satanism is than I do? You know, this is how egotistical people are. So I'm telling you from a firsthand experience being a priest in the Church of Satan, by my definition, by my understanding of what the satanic religion was, and I know a considerable amount because I was appointed as a clergyman within the religion, okay? The vast majority of human beings, by definition, are Satanists because of what they think and believe on a daily basis, because they're acting out of a position of pure selfishness. And that's what Satanism ultimately is. The first tenet is total egotism. Egotism run rampant. That's what Satanism is. If I could say what Satanism is in one statement, it is Satanism is the state of consciousness by which you only ultimately care about yourself and you don't care about anybody else in the world. Really, ultimately, you know, you could say, oh, I care about my family and friends. That's not what I'm talking about. It means you don't have a wider care of what happens in humanity. You don't care what happens in the world. You don't care what happens to strangers. You don't care what happens to your fellow countrymen and your fellow earthlings at large. You only care about yourself and your own. And that's it. That's Satanism. That is exactly what Satanism is from a perspective of someone who was clergy in the religion.
How long were you part of that, the clergy?
I was involved in it for many years before I was appointed a priest in the Church of Satan. So I would say probably from about 1990, late 1991, early 1992, I was already significantly involved. And I was appointed priest in the year 1997. It was either 96 or 97. I think it was 97. And then I finally said that I'm not part of this anymore, probably around sometime in 99, 2000, once I really started seeing what it was in a heavy way. I would say overall around 7 to 8 years, you know, totally espousing the ideology, finally coming out of it just before 2000, around 99.
What was it that...
And I wasn't fully out of it then. I just started reversing my mind frame then. You know, I wouldn't say I was fully really out of the mindset until about maybe 2004, 2005. Let's say 2004, fully out of it.
What was it that snapped you out of it? Like that really like made you say, I got to turn this around and do the right thing?
Great question. It was attending rituals in my tri-state area and seeing people involved in Satanism from every institutional body that wields power in the world. So there were people attending satanic rituals and groups and what they call their covens are known as grottos. The word is grotto, G-R-O-T-T-O. Grotto is like a clearing in a forest or woods, and you know, they call their meetings, their what you would call covens in witchcraft, they call them grottos. Okay, so when I was attending satanic grottos in my area, I saw people from every institutional walk of life attending, namely people in positions of power and influence in organizations like military, law. Law enforcement, you know, like, you know, judges, you know, bankers, you know, teachers, principals of schools, doctors, you know, administrators of hospitals. You name the institution, you name the position of power, people were attending grottos of Satanism that were in those walks of life and in those positions. So when I saw that this isn't just like your average person getting together because they want some knowledge and they want to learn how certain things work. No, these were power brokers assembling in different areas, you know, that were members of this religion, that were totally in their mindset at full adherence to this religion. Totally selfish, egotistical, psychopathic people that only cared about themselves and advancing power. But see, what really made me say I need to walk away from this wasn't just because there were individuals doing that. They were all working together in concert, and they were trying to advance a preformed, pre-planned agenda at a much, much higher level that was barely visible to me at the time. You know, they weren't calling the shots. They were following the orders. They themselves were order followers at a lower level from something that was just out of reach up much higher up the totem pole, up the hierarchy. And when I started to gather and learn about what that was, it was about the enslavement of all humanity, because there is a priest class that is much higher up in the satanic network hierarchy that's calling the shots. These people are just henchmen doing the bidding of this higher level priest class. And they're thinking like, I'm going to get the fallout of this. I'm not going to be somebody who's enslaved. You know, everybody else is going to be enslaved. We're going to sort of be the managerial class who are helping to just keep them enslaved because of what we know and what we have done. You know, we'll be thrown that bone where we're not fully enslaved. We have a certain modicum of freedom as long as we're continuing to do the bidding of the higher level occultists. That's what the groups that I was involved with, that's how I would categorize them. So when I saw that that's what it was really about, was human enslavement. Let's just say it out in the open. You know, that's what they were really about. That's when I said, this isn't what I signed up for. You know, I knew the occult was ancient hidden knowledge to give us a leg up on our fellow ignoramus, around us, all of the what I call the ignorati, you know, that's what's real. Forget the Illuminati. The ignorati is very real. You know, that's almost every human being around us. When I
that's
saw
a good one.
willfully ignorati.
When I realized that the occult, the dark occult, was far more than just getting a leg up on our fellow ignorant human beings, so that put us in a better life position, right? That's what I considered the occult was when I got involved. And in my ego, that's why I wanted to get involved when I was young. I'm like, I want this knowledge about the human psyche and psychology that gives me a leg up on whoever I'm interacting with. I want that, you know? But I never signed up to enslave everybody around me, you know? And when I found out that's ultimately really what the agenda was, then I said, no, you know, I'm not going to be involved in that. And many people gladly go along with it. They discern over time, oh, that's what this is? This is about us being the kings of everybody else? We're the kings and queens, and they're the peasants and minions? Oh, yes, yeah, sign me up. Let me go further. They get excited about it and want to be groomed for further involvement. When I heard that, I wanted to vomit at what I had become involved in, you know? And people don't know that this is what this religion is. And most people will go along with it. Most people will even hear what the real agenda is, and they'll say, sign me up for further involvement. That sounds like my cup of tea because I want to be the king. I want to be the queen, you know? They don't want real freedom. They want their own freedom. They're not interested in freedom for humanity. They're interested in their own personal power and freedom, you know? And all too many people in the so-called freedom movement are the my freedom people, you know? They're not out for real freedom, or they would be learning natural law, you know? They would stop believing in moral relativism, which is the second tenet of Satanism after pure egotism. You know, a lot of the people in the whole freedom movement have a lot of the satanic characteristics. You know, they generally have the first two in huge abundance. Ego, that's kind of run out of control and run amok, and moral relativism. The idea that mankind can make up what right and wrong are. Right and wrong are an objective standards that exist in the fabric of nature, in reality. That they're, you know, moral relativism says that morals aren't objective. You know, they're not based inherently in nature. They'll say that they're subjective and they're based on the perceptions of human beings and the whims of human beings. You know, that's Satanism. That's the biggest, one of the biggest tenets of Satanism is moral relativism. You know, that human beings can make up what rights are. Human beings can make up what wrongs are. Well, if human beings can make up what rights are, and rights are human beings' creation subjectively as a construct in the mind, well, then human beings can get rid of rights whenever they no longer suit their aims. Oh, well, we don't need those. Let's get rid of those rights. We don't need those, you know, by definition. And people who are saying they want to be free don't even understand that, you know. They think you can have freedom and moral relativism simultaneously. Well, that's like having your cake and eating it too. It doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that.
No, it doesn't.
Okay, guys, we are at our first break, and we will see you on the other side. We are back, and it has been an amazing episode so far, and we are going to start off with a question from Brandon.
Well, I wanted to ask you a question here about the season of sacrifice.
Sure.
What do you think happens to the consciousness of your average person and brain functionalities when we repeatedly experience this type of psychological operation done in our world?
Great question. I would say it's a high level of trauma. Trauma right. is what you're really referring to dynamically, psychologically, that's happening. And it's terrible. I mean, unless they're very, very knowledgeable about the exact techniques that are used, they're going to go into a traumatic reaction. And that damages the brain. It damages the psyche. It damages the mind, you know? And often what they are doing when they put them into this type of a traumatic mindset is they're softening them up for what is to come. Because most people will be like, well, I don't want to be messed up. I don't want to be, health damaged and or damaged like by a bomb or something like that. You know, I don't want to have a chaos going on all around me in my society. So I'll do whatever is asked of me to avoid that. See, people want to avoid these, you know, negative, painful situations. They don't want a painful situation happening. And they're convinced because of the way that the ritual is set up, the way that the Hegelian dialectic chaos sorcery event is set up, that unless they give externalize their power and give their power away to, quote, the authorities, right, to people in positions of authority already, that they're going to have to live in a painful, situation. You know, that's what the mind controllers convince them of, that you're going to have to live in an uncomfortable, painful, chaotic situation unless you give us your power. And they're all too happy to say, here, deal with it, hand it over. I don't want to deal with that. Do whatever you have to. If it inconveniences me and it takes my rights away, I'm all the more willing to give that up as an inconvenience, because I want this taken care of. They don't want to take the responsibility to deal with, if it's a real threat, deal with it themselves. You know, that's why I've always said I don't believe in prisons. That doesn't teach people to deal with the responsibility, to take on the responsibility of having to deal with a criminal element that they've made in their own society. They've made in their own midst through not morally educating the young. The young grow into psychopathic adults, commit crimes. And then who should have to deal with that? Should a small class of people have to deal with that? Then they say we're the authorities because we're dealing with all of the bad people that our whole community created amongst ourselves? No, there should not be any organization like that. The people themselves should exercise the responsibility to deal with what they themselves have created. That's called personal responsibility. And you know what? Freedom and personal responsibility are no longer good terms in our culture. They're like bad words. It's like evil four-letter words.
Right.
Know? It's unbelievable when you say freedom. You know, when you say personal responsibility, you know, it is utterly amazing that people actually believe that that's a bad thing in the modern world. They say, oh, you're a freedom advocate. You're a freedom champion. How selfish.
How selfish.
Imagine this.
Yeah, it's horrible.
That I stand for morality and personal responsibility, you know. And I'm being called selfish. People like me are being called selfish. The nerve that they have.
Yeah, so, it seems like there's a lot of ambiguity being brought into it as well. People don't understand the definitive definitions of those terms anymore, and they're being completely inverted to the point where it's self-destructive to the whole society.
Right. That's exactly what's going on. You know, they believe that freedom means not being responsible, you know.
Right.
They think being responsible is like being a collectivist, you know, that you're so identified with the collective that somehow, oh, there's no separation between, you know, me, my rights and anybody else, you know, as far as a group identity. No, there is still individualism in real freedom. Of course. Of course, it means you care about others because, you know, everybody's rights are the same. There are no rights that some people have that other people don't. So if one person's rights are being tread upon, then everyone's is. You know, we don't have our own individuated rights unless everyone has their own individuated rights. That's how real freedom works, you know. And the real way of creating that situation and preserving it is by taking true personal responsibility to do the right thing, you know, even if it means defending yourself against psychopaths, defending yourself against criminal elements, Of course, that's the second principle of natural law. The first principle is the non-aggression principle. Don't initiate harm against your fellow sentient being. And the second principle is, if harm is initiated against you, then you have a right to defend yourself against it with whatever amount of force is necessary to repel the harm. You know, that's it. And, you know, we can never give that right up either. You know, people who think that, oh, somehow caring about others is that you're going to give up your right to defend yourself. No, that's exactly not caring about others. Giving up the right to defend yourself means you don't care about others, especially if you're going to give up the right to defend yourself against, you know, people who, you know, are psychopaths and criminals, you know.
So I got another question for you here, Mark.
Sure.
You had mentioned the ritual at Bohemian Grove, and I want to know exactly why the dark occult love using the symbols of the dove and the owl.
Sure. Well, the dove and the owl obviously both go back into the ancient past symbolically. The owl goes back into goddesses that were basically from the Babylonian and Sumerian period, namely goddesses like Ishtar, Inanna, etc., and that represented the care element. That represented, you know, heart-based energy. You know, the goddess was always the symbol of emotion. You know, it was always the symbol of protection as well, because if we have the heart-based intelligence that is generated by our emotions, and we follow that, and we develop that into the knowledge of conscience, and then we live according to that, we express that through wisdom, through doing the right action, then, you know, the sacred male child is born into the world of right action, you know, which is really the savior of the world, symbolically. So, you know, this goddess was always that symbol of that type of heart-based power and transformation. And so that's why they want to pervert it. You know, the same thing with the dove. The dove goes back into ancient Egypt and, of course, Rome and, you know, Greece. And that is also a symbol of many goddesses, you know, in the Egyptian tradition, Isis, going down into the Grecian and Roman traditions, many different names for the goddess over time. Athena, you know, trying to think of a couple of other ones. You know, well, the point is that the dove was always symbolized by that. Of course, in the Christian tradition, the dove symbolizes the Holy Spirit, which is connected with Mary. You know, she's that goddess figure that is removed from the Trinity in the Christian tradition and replaced with the dove, symbolizing the Holy Spirit. So the dove is, again, that symbol of feminine energy, of heart-based energy, of, you know, heart-based intelligence and true care. So, of course, in the dark occult, they want to twist and pervert that symbol, right? So especially you're seeing that with the owl. So the owl is becoming the bull god, right, of Molech in the Carthaginian tradition, because instead of actually, you know, using the owl in its true aspect, they're making an owl that's a horned owl that looks similar to Molech. So it's a twisting and a perverting of that symbol. Okay, that's what they're doing there. That's all the dark occult ever does. They don't create. They pervert, they twist what's there already. So the whole ritual is set up in it's an actual feminized ritual, the cremation of care. The symbology there is ancient feminine goddesses, but they're turning it into the symbol of their ancient male god that they sacrificed children to back in Carthage, okay, and in other places in the world. It's again like a mockery ritual. You have to look at it like that. Like they're intentionally twisting certain forms. So the goddess symbol of the owl is not really the owl. It's the bull of Molech. If you look at pictures of Molech in any drawings or depictions, it was always a bull. And this is their real god. Again, Baal, Bel, Bill, you know, has always been their god, the bull god, okay, because it represents the sun in Taurus, which is, again, where the rising of the equinox was, of the sun and the equinox in the precession of the equinox at that time period, 6,000 years ago, the sun was in Taurus. You know, obviously now it's in Pisces and heading toward Aquarius in the precession. So, you know, they're paying homage to the bull god, which is the sun in Taurus. And that's why it's the symbol of Wall Street, the golden bull, right? The illuminated bull, okay? The bull god. That's why our money is bills, right? Again, it's an homage to the name of their god, Baal, okay? You know, you can go on and on. You know, the Bilderberg group means Bill's house, the spirit of Bill's house, you know? They use this name as a ritual form of mockery over and over and over again. Okay. You know, their high holiday is Beltane. That means Bell's wheel. Well, what is Bell's wheel? The Zodiac, you know, Bell is the sun and his wheel is the Zodiac. You know, that's May 1st, the end of the season of sacrifice, Beltane. So, you know, you can go on and on with looking at, you know, this BL combination, right? That's the name of their god. And that's why they use it over and over again in their rituals and in their symbolism. But, you know, that's the feminine symbolism is what they're deliberately using because they're trying to come in and twist it and distort it and ritually mock it by tying it in with their god Molech and the sacrifice that, you know, they're giving it, namely the care energy. They're immolating, you know, care and immolating, you know, conscience. Conscience is really what is being immolated there, you know. People's, you know, drive to do what is right, you know, they don't want that present. They want people easily pushing it away, saying that's dull, that doesn't serve my egoic wishes and desires, and I could easily just push that away and just set it on fire and not ever care about it again. You know, that's the whole idea of the ritual is absolution for the sins that you're going to do. You know, don't worry about caring about them. Just do what you're going to do and receive your reward. You know, that's what the absolution ritual is all about, because these are people who are there who are going to be the henchmen that they're going to pay probably a whole lot of money and resources to over the next year to carry out their bidding long term, the long term agenda. These are just low level point men. That's all they are. That's who basically attends those rituals. And that's why you just look at it. You look at where is humanity's mindset. All you got to do is look at how big of a waiting list there is for something like Bohemian Grove. There's a like decade long waiting list to get into that club. That's how many people would do that, would want to be in that position of power. You know, humanity hasn't really learned much of anything. They're all they really care about is money. All most people care about is money. From the day they wake up, minute they wake up till the minute they go to sleep, that's all they're concerned about. They don't care about what's right, you know? And as long as people don't care about what's right, freedom is impossible. And that's what the great work is. The great work is to tell people it doesn't make... You have to become the person that is so strong in what is right that it does not matter if all the wealth and power of the world are offered to you, you would still reject it to do the right thing. And I know that sounds like an unbelievable standard, but it's like, you know, help us to advance the vaccine agenda. Help us to advance the GMO food agenda. You know, help us to advance the police state agenda. You know, there is no amount of money that could be given to me. No amount. Would not matter if you said you are now the king of all money and no one else has a penny and you have all money. It wouldn't matter. I would say, I don't want it. I'm not interested.
Same.
You know, that's it.
Absolutely.
This is the kind of person that has to be built. Now, then the question becomes, how many people worldwide, percentage-wise, when it comes to all of humanity, do you think are already built to that level of strength? It's an infinitesimally piss-poor, little tiny piss-in-a-pot amount that amounts to a hill of beans. It's nothing. It's zero, practically, when it comes to all of humanity, percentage-wise. Almost everybody would take a certain payoff to do a certain immoral behavior. We have to all become the people who would never do it, no matter what, no matter how much is offered. And we're nowhere near that. Nowhere near it.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. It's a very, very sad state with that. You kind of already answered this question, but, you know, do you think that the average person would willfully take up that position of being a dark occultist if they had that opportunity, even if they weren't getting paid?
I would say if they were offered the benefits that come with it, like worldly power, and other, you know, types of, you know, influence and other types of, you know, positions of comfort that come with it. Absolutely. Right. You know, I think most people would trade places with the master. You know, if they, yep, even if they recognize there's a world of masters and slaves, most people would say, I would be totally comfortable becoming one of the masters and continuing the slave class. There's a movie called I Care a Lot that was about this, that was just released, you know, that has a sort of a twist ending, which I thought was pretty decent. But the whole movie is about this woman who, you know, makes the satanic mindset recognition that, oh, the world is already a world of power and masters and slaves, and I'm going to be the wolf instead of the sheep. And it's fine for me to devour whoever is under me, you know. But then, you know, you have to watch it to see where it goes. But the whole point is, you know, most people would totally do that in a heartbeat, is my answer. In a heartbeat, you know, with no problem at all, with no moral, trepidation whatsoever. They would do it right in a second.
Yeah, I've asked most people, like just running into people at the bars or at events and things like this, that same question. And they always answer honestly. And they say, yes, you know, I would definitely take up that position.
Right.
I would get some benefit from that.
And do you know what it means? Why wouldn't I? Do you know what that means? That means that they're perfectly okay with the continuation of slavery. That's how you have to answer them. See, if people say that to me, what I say is, well, that means that the kind of person that you are is that you are perfectly fine with slavery continuing as long as you believe you're not one of the slaves. That's the kind of person that would look at a slavery plantation next door to him. If he was in Civil War era America and he had a house adjacent to the plantation, he'd look over at the slaves and he'd be like, boy, I'm glad that's not me. That's the kind of person you're dealing with there. And he's like, and oh, it would be nice if I had a bunch of slaves here on my property, but I'm not rich enough to have that. You know, that's the kind of person that you're dealing with there. And if you say it to them like that, maybe they'll think about it a little bit. Yeah, that's what has to be said to people who answer something like that that way, is that's what you would have been in Civil War era America. You'd be looking over the, you know, property line fence, and you'd be going, boy, I wish I had all these slaves. Wouldn't that make my life so much better? You wouldn't be interested in freeing people from slavery at all. You know, that's the exact same thing that's going on just about everywhere today. People looking at the whole world situation and government and saying that it's fine for this to continue, totally condoning slavery of government and being totally fine with it. No problem with the authority of government, no problem with the claim of authority on other people, you know. And many of them, you'd say, well, if you could become president and call shots, or if you could become a high-level politician and call shots in any given area, would you do it? They would say, yes, I would. You know, and believing that things would be better because they would be the ones calling the shots, not realizing that what has to happen is a system of authority and slavery needs to end completely because it's an immoral condition. It never was moral. It isn't moral now, and it never will be moral.
That's right. Yeah, I find it more often than not that most people are not, in complete ignorance about what's going on in the world. They actually know that this is a system of slavery, and they willfully continue to persist and condone that and support that. And I find that more and more as I, you know, put more work out there, that, you know, people do understand this at some level. We cannot give them any type of justification for them to be in that mindset, you know, because it is the collective masses that are allowing this to take place, obviously.
Without a doubt. I mean, could you imagine that that's the kind of people that humanity has become? Humanity has become people that when seeing a wrongdoing being perpetrated, just say, well, I'm not hurt right now. So what if that continues? And a bunch of other people get hurt down the line. You know, I'm not going to worry about that until I'm necessarily the one being hurt. And they believe they're good. They believe that that somehow constitutes being a good person. That isn't a good person. Those are bad people. That's what it means to be a bad person, you know? And not enough people have said that to them. And clearly their parents haven't instilled any true morality in them. You know, clearly their parents have just let them, you know, go along with that mindset. Or maybe the parents instilled that mindset in them, you know? And we have to just say to each other, this is unacceptable. This is unacceptable, and it needs to be fought. And I don't mean it needs to be physically fought. It needs to be absolutely confronted. We have to make it a confrontational thing when we speak to people, you know, regarding these dynamics. It needs to be fought. Psychologically, it needs to be fought. Culturally, you know, we need to put that this is a wrong idea. You know, that thinking that way is just wrong morally out there to other people openly and if necessary, confrontationally, you know, that makes a situation completely uncomfortable and maybe even puts relationships on thin ice or destroys them altogether. Because if these are the people that we're having any types of relationship with, even in an associate or friendship type relationship, you know, that means that we're having a relationship with somebody who is really bad. You know, they're a bad, immoral person deep down inside. And I think we got to give them, at the very minimum, a time to reevaluate what they think and change it or sever the relationship. Say, right. You know, I can't really continue with this relationship because I don't consider you a moral being.
Right. And and that's the extension of the principle of self-defense, you know.
That's right.
It goes a long way.
That's right, because if they're making it clear to you that they're that kind of person, who's to say that they won't do something like that to you next? You know, right. That's not a person that can be trusted.
Absolutely. I had a question regarding the events of the Season of Sacrifice, something that you talk about with the dove. I was hoping you could expand on that, what that means in correspondence with these events.
Sure. Well, you know, you see things like the Columbine Massacre. You know, Kalum means dove, you know, in Romance languages. You know, you see things like the Columbia space shuttle disaster. You know, you see, other events where they're bringing this type of symbolism of the dove into events that happened during that time period. You know, and again, the dove represents the goddess. It represents the Holy Spirit. It represents caring, right? It represents, you know, the dynamic heart-based energy that basically says, if someone else is suffering, I'm suffering. If someone else's rights are being taken away, my rights are being taken away. That's what the dove represents. So, of course, in these rituals, they want to use a sacrifice symbol, you know. For example, the Columbia space shuttle burning up in the atmosphere, you know. That's a symbolic ritual of the dove being immolated. Again, you often see this idea of the dove is set on fire, you know. You often see the dove at war memorials, you know. And this is the idea that, it's just another huge sacrifice ritual. War is a big sacrifice ritual. It's ongoing. It's an ongoing sacrifice ritual. So, you know, again, the key thing to keep in mind whenever you see dove symbolism is, and of course, Washington, D.C., where our rights are constantly ritualistically immolated. You know, D.C. is the District of Columbia, Kalum, the dove, you know. again, it's all done to symbolically mock the goddess. Now, a lot of people think, oh, the dark occultists are, they are... venerating the goddess. They're not venerating the goddess. It's not a worship of their goddess. You know, you have to understand they are killing the goddess. It is a ritual sacrifice and murder of the goddess because the goddess represents care, heart-based intelligence, heart energy, you know, that which they don't want expressing in the world. They don't want that to express in the world. They want selfishness to express in the world. You know, they want people only caring about themselves to express in the world. You know, they want people saying, well, as long as that's not happening to me, I don't care that it's happening to other people. That's what they want expressing in the world. That is all ritualistically and symbolically the murder of the goddess, the murder of the dove.
It's just so crazy when you actually go down the rabbit hole and see all these events that have taken place during this time. And, you know, you really start to see the patterns. And I was wondering if you could explain how you can see the patterns, especially regarding gematria.
Well, you know, you look at something like 9/11, you know, a big human sacrifice ritual didn't take place during the season of sacrifice, took place in the month of September, but clearly an example of chaos sorcery, clearly a human sacrifice ritual. And, you know, to be honest with you, you know, I think that 9/11 was the linchpin where everything turned. I think that 9/11 was like the test for humanity, that we failed, completely failed. 9/11 was the event that the universe basically put before our consideration and said, here's your opportunity to prove that you care. Here's your opportunity to prove that you will expose deception and falsehood. Here's the opportunity to prove that you're not okay with 3,000 of your fellow beings being ritualistically murdered, and you're going to get down to the truth of what occurred and expose it. And you know what humanity said? Screw all that. We don't need any part of that. You know, we're going to accept the official story. We're going to, you know, do what they tell us in the aftermath with the Patriot Act, et cetera, and lock down our society and take away people's rights and freedoms. And we don't care who really did it. We're going to accept that 19 Arab hijackers with box cutters, you know, defeated NORAD and flew two planes into three buildings, you know, knocked down three buildings with two planes. Most people don't still to this day don't even know three buildings came down on 9/11, not two. They know nothing about Building 7. And they certainly don't know about the occult underpinnings. See, I think that was like it was a opening of the gate ritual, and the coronavirus is almost like a closing of the gate. It's like you had a 20-year period to expose the truth. And it's like that's what could have transformed society if we exposed the truth of 9/11. And instead, the society has to get shut down further, you know. And if we don't expose the truth of the coronavirus pandemic nonsense, society is going to get shut down even further at a probably a faster point, a sooner point. It's not going to be 20 years. It's going to be less than 10 or 5. Okay. You know, and this is because humanity doesn't have the knowledge to see the patterns, and it doesn't have the courage to expose the truth. It doesn't care. It doesn't care. It's totally ignorant. It's apathetic. It doesn't care. It doesn't want to do the work. It doesn't want to take the responsibility, you know, and people still aren't honest about it. They're still not honest about that. They're still making excuses for people. There is no excuse. This should be as evident as waking up and going outside and seeing the sun in the sky. Literally, that's how blatant this stuff is becoming. And yet people still, because of their cowardice, don't want to rock the boat. They don't want to be noticed. They don't want to speak out. They don't want to use their voice. Again, the universe is spoken into existence. Our experience is spoken into existence. What we say becomes what we experience. There's no easier way of putting the law of attraction than that. What we speak and then what is eventually accepted as being true by other people is what becomes our experience. So what our experience is now is the collective acceptance of what has been spoken to us, mostly through the media and through so-called education. And look at it. What is it worth? It's a totally worthless garbage experience. You know, all this experience should be teaching us is what not to do, We did nothing of what is required and everything that is wrong, you know? So 9/11 to me is a great example of this with how much ritual they put into things. You know, it was the two pillars, you know, that are the Masonic pillars of Joaquin and Boaz being destroyed, symbolically representing the destruction of the Temple of Solomon. What is the symbolic Temple of Solomon? It's the brain. Traumatic rituals destroy the brain, destroy the mind, you know, the left brain and the right brain, sun and moon, the male and female aspects of consciousness, soul, moon, Solomon. The Temple of Solomon is the brain. It's the mind, you know. And, you know, that's what they're ritualistically destroying. They're destroying consciousness. You know, they're traumatizing the mind. That's all human and chaos sorcery rituals do that. And, you know, then you look at the gematria, you know, flight 11, 175 and 93. I mean, to an occultist, that's like red, you know, red flags and bells and whistles should go off, you know. 11 is the number of the occult. That's a signaling number, you know. Then you have 175. You know, if you add that together, you get 196 and split them in half, it's 93, you know, or 186, right? And split that in half, it's 93, okay? So you have three 93s symbolically on 9/11, you know. The plane that was that crashed in Pennsylvania that was, I claim, was moving toward, was really going to be the plane that went to Building 7 and struck that, you know, but it didn't, because an act of will on the part of probably a military person, a Air Force person, shot it out of the sky, probably, and that's why there was no major wreckage, you know, so, or it possibly could have been a missile that was shot out of the sky, you know, so, you know, Flight 93, whatever that happened to be, was going to be headed toward Building 7, you know, and that's another symbolic number, 7, you know, representing, you know, climbing out of base consciousness. The 6 is base consciousness. The 7 is, you know, coming out of base consciousness. That's why 666 is the number of the beast, the devil, Satan. It's base consciousness. And 777 represents completion in consciousness, coming out of that lower level of consciousness and being activated in thought, emotion, and action. 666 representing ignorance, apathy, and laziness and cowardice, because you're not using thought, emotion, and action. Those are all inactive or dead. So, you know, tons and tons of gematria used in a lot of their rituals, you know, especially on 9/11 where it's everywhere, you know. Again, flight 11 and 175, you know, added together is the number 186. You divide that in two and you get 93. So they really, you know, divided 93 over two flight numbers, 175 and 11. You know, it's not that hard to figure out if you know occult gematria. It's like I said, red flags go up as soon as you see the number 11, and especially the number 93. That's like sirens and, you know, wailing, you know, sirens, you know, saying, hey, sit up and pay attention. This is an occult ritual. You know, the number 93 being in thelema, the number of, you know, the will and love. Again, destroying that, right? Destroying 93 on all three buildings. You know, if you split 11 and 175 that hit the towers, you have 93 on each building. And then 93 was the one that was supposed to hit Building 7. And 93 means higher level consciousness, love, willpower, you know, being truly active. They don't want that. So those are the things that were destroyed. You know, those were the things that were, again, ritualistically immolated, because there was so much heat energy used on those buildings that it was like a nuclear fire, you know. Obviously, you're not going to get hot enough to melt steel with, you know, kerosene-based type fuel, you know. So that's not what created all that heat. Clearly, something else did, you know, and made the buildings fall at free fall speed. Because, again, a collapse of a building doesn't happen that way. That kinetic energy is going to be absorbed, and it's going to take a lot longer than the building falling at apparent free fall speed, which all the buildings did. You know, so then you got to ask yourself, well, what is the force that's acting in that way to make them fall that way? And that's when you get into the occult aspects of technology. You know, you get into Tesla, You know, you get into stuff that Judy Wood talked about with directed energy weapons. You know, there's a whole occult science going on with that ritual. You know, in addition to providing the trauma and the Hegelian dialectic of problem, reaction, solution to go and, you know, take natural gas and oil from the Middle East and set up more bases there, you know, so we can continue aggressing upon that area of the world, you know, and, you know, an attempt to further destabilize it, you know, for what's coming. So occult symbolism and gematria plays heavily into that because they're creatures of habit. You know, they're not people who will do anything new if they don't have to, and they don't have to because people don't understand what they're doing. They don't understand any part of the magic that's being played upon them. They're under spell. They're in thrall. There's the word for this whole interview. These people are in what is called a state of thrall, thrall. It means being held totally in someone else's influence. You know, where, you know, their will is completely subjugated. You know, it's like mind control, like Svengali holding somebody in total mind control, you know, and that's what the people of the world are held in. They're held in thrall and they don't even understand that they're in that trance. They don't even understand that they're under that spell, you know, and they believe that they're good people, not looking into any of it. They believe that they're good people, not caring. They believe that they're good people, not becoming active and teaching other people. That doesn't make you a good person. That makes you a coward. That makes you a bad person. You know, cowardice to speak out about any of this stuff makes someone a bad person. And that's what I think we have to continuously emphasize. A good person doesn't turn away and ignore when bad things are happening to other people. A good person tries to expose evil. A good person tries to expose bad evil events that are perpetrated upon humanity by wicked people. You know, it doesn't hide in a corner going, oh my God, I'm so glad that didn't happen to me and I'm not going to say anything or rock the boat and maybe nobody will ever do anything bad to me. A coward does that, you know, and that's most people. Most people are cowards. Most people are ignorant. Most people don't care. And until we influence that to change by helping people to become intelligent, caring, and active, the world is incapable of changing because the world is an amalgamation. The experience that we undergo in the world is an amalgamation of the behavior of all of its people. And all you have to do is look, what is the quality of the behavior of human beings? Is it high quality behavior or is it low quality base consciousness behavior? And I think the answer is so evident that a 5-year-old could figure it out. And it's sad, but it's true. And it's our job to do the great work of presenting the truth to people, you know, in a matter of fact way, such that that situation changes. That's what the great work is to do.
Wow. Yeah, the gematria is definitely one of the most fascinating topics that has really caught my eye, especially when in correspondence to Freemasonry. Can you give us a little bit of what you know about like the Freemasonry that is
sure
used in reference with gematria? I know you kind of already said sure it with the buildings, but maybe go a little further with
yeah
that.
Without slides, it could be a little difficult. I'd recommend people to go to my podcast section where I break this down with slides and in the original What on Earth is Happening presentation where I have slides for all of this. But briefly, First of all, Freemasonry is not what a lot of people think that it is. A lot of people don't have any familiarity with it, and they think that it is all one thing. As I said before, just about every occult school of thought, whether it's the Freemasonic school of thought, whether it's Kabbalah, Tarot, Rosicrucianism, Thelema, you know, Kamishan science, you know, on and on, there is a dark and a light side. Okay, so the light side is teaching the true tradition unblemished to the best of its ability and teaching and what it's all these traditions ultimately teach when they are blemished is natural law. It's teaching people how to receive natural law, how to receive the laws of the creator of the universe properly and then put them in, live according to them. What the dark occult tradition does is try to obscure that and then emphasize a different aspect of either the teachings or just make it into some sort of a club for influence and power. That's how you know that the tradition has fallen off path. Okay. In the modern world, that is the Freemasonic tradition. And what is it today? Do people look at the Freemasonic tradition as, wow, this is some place we can go to really learn objective morality and natural law? It can help us to prepare ourselves to receive natural law, really understand it deeply, and then live it and then teach it to others. Is that how the majority of the world perceives the Freemasonic tradition? No way. Not even close. It perceives it as, you know, an old rich man's club that is there to, you know, basically benefit its own, you know, possibly at the expense of others, but certainly only caring about itself and its own, and holding secrets, right? Holding secrets in its lodge system. This is how it's perceived. And, you know, people who defend lodge Freemasonry will say, well, that's because people have to want this knowledge to come to it. It's not true. You know, I take umbrage with all forms of elitism when it comes to occultism like that. You're not doing anybody a disservice. You're buying into your own ego. You know, this whole idea of the hermeticists of the ancient world. There's another occult tradition that has a dark and a light side of saying, oh, we don't cast pearls before swine. We only tell people who are ready to know. Well, first of all, who are you to be the judge of who's ready and who's not? Right. Secondly, if some people, you know, might be ready and you don't know that and you never say anything to them, maybe what you would have said is the seed that gets planted that activates them down the line at some point, right? So I don't believe in this elitist form of occultism, of be quiet, never say anything until they actually try to pry it out of you, then tell them, if that, or then make them pay dues somewhere to go get the knowledge, which they might not even ever get. That's the modern lodge system in all of these things, whether it be Hermeticism, Freemasonry, Kabbalah, Rosicrucianism, etc. It's, to me, it's all a fallen system because they're not doing what they were originally charged to do, and that's teach natural law to the public, to the masses of people. You know, you want to look at, you know, an allegory that tells people what really to do. Look at the New Testament as an allegory, you know. Jesus charged the disciples to teach the message that he was teaching people. That's it. He didn't say only give it to people who are willing to listen. You know, the whole idea is teach it to people. They'll benefit from it. You know, if your message is pure and it's not going to be perverted into something negative and bad, then you don't have to worry about anybody twisting it and distorting it and using it for dark occult purposes. You know, teach people the truth. Ultimately, with the truth, you're not going to do any harm. You know, so in Freemasonry, there's some basic symbolism, especially in the first degree tracing board that was highly used on 9/11 in the, you know, chaos sorcery event of 9/11. And, you know, it's the first degree tracing board is three pillars on a checkerboard floor with some tools in front of them with a ladder that goes from the right hand side of the pillar to the left hand side. It goes from the dark pillar to the light pillar, passing a middle pillar in between. And what this represents is the path of the sun. If you turn the board on its side and study it from a, you know, sideways approach, you see that these are the lines of these are the latitude lines on the Earth of the equator and the tropics. The equator and the Tropic of Cancer, that is 23.5 degree north latitude, and the Tropic of Capricorn, which is 23.5 degree south latitude. The sun is represented as either being in the middle at the equator or being at its high point at the Tropic of Cancer or at its low point, in which it is depicted as the moon, at the Tropic of Capricorn. This is the periods of, you know, the seasons of Earth that Earth experiences because of the 23.5 degree tilt of the Earth with respect to its plane of rotation around the sun. So what you're really seeing is the ladder representing a journey out of darkness, out of the low period of the sun to its high point at the midpoint of the summer season. Okay. And, you know, it represents coming out of the darkness of ignorance and reaching the light, reaching the knowledge of natural law, and then living your life in harmony with it. And that's how you also leave the earth plane and go to the mindset of, quote, the gods or the sun, the true sun. You know, they're basically taking this beautiful symbolism in the Freemasonic tradition representing morality and progression of consciousness from unconscious to conscious. And they're utterly obliterating it. You know, the whole ritual of 9/11 is the obliteration of consciousness and the spiritual journey. You know, just think about that. If that symbolism represents the spiritual journey out of darkness and into light, then what they are doing in this dark, occult, bloodletting, blood sacrifice, human sacrifice, chaos sorcery ritual, is they are symbolically annihilating consciousness itself, such that people cannot become aware, such that they cannot learn the truth, you know, because they're traumatized by the experience. And they were very successful because, you know, 20 years later, people still aren't any closer to wanting the truth of 9/11. It's so sad. And you know who I, as a brief aside, you know, aside from talking about the Freemasonry and its basic teachings and symbolism. But when it comes to this event of 9/11 chaos sorcery, I think that some of the people who are the most loathsome in all of this are structural engineers, because they know that it couldn't have come down the way that it came down, and they're cowards. Only a few tiny percentage of them wants to speak out. But you know who else is? Firefighters. The firefighters that were there, they know what occurred. They know that there were explosives. They know that there was other energies at work. It was a combination of all of those things to obfuscate the real thing that happened. And let me tell you something. A lot of those people just are closing their mouth. They won't say anything because they're cowards who want to collect the pension. They're low-life cowards, because the firefighters on 9/11, I don't care what you went through or how you were traumatized. You know it didn't happen like the official story presents. You know the government are liars. A lot of you know this definitively who were there. And guess what you are? You're little boy cowards who you're worried about money. All you care about is your pension. You don't want to rock the boat in your department. And that makes you a little boy. That's what it makes you. And I'll say it to you like that since no one else will. The firefighters are some of the people who are the lowest life cowards in the whole event of 9/11. I'll say it right to their families. Say it to them and their families, because you guys know it didn't happen like the official events that the government told us. You know they're liars, and you won't say a word because you care more about money than truth and all of your fellow compatriots who were murdered on that day. That's what you care more about. You care more about the paycheck and the pension, low life. That's what you care about. And bring them to me. Bring them to me in person. I'll say it to their face in person. You know, people think I care. I don't care. You know, I'm one of those guys where, trust me, I don't care. You know, I will say it to their face. And that's what needs to be done. And then maybe some more of them will feel guilty about what lowlifes they are and come forward and say the truth that they know to other people that carries more weight than the average person because they were up close and personal there. But you know what? As long as you guys worship mammon, don't expect anybody to learn about what's going on, because you guys are the people who have the ability to influence it more than anybody, and your mouths are sewn shut by money of all things. You know, and then you think you're good people and heroes? Your parents didn't raise you right, boy. You know, that's what people need to say to you. You know, you didn't learn right from wrong. You learned how to worship money. That's what you learned. You know, who's saying it like that? Where have you ever heard it said? You'll never hear it said like that. Take that and play that on all the 9/11 truth sites. Take that and play that on all the firefighter YouTube channels that they're saying that they're heroes for what they did on 9/11. You showed up after the fact and accepted the government lie and let them take all the steel away, punk. You let them clean up a crime scene so that they could get away with the crime. That's what you helped. Nothing else. You know, let's not call people heroes when they did nothing heroic or courageous, where they shut up, did what they were told, and then postulated the official story or were silent about what they knew. That doesn't take any heroism to do that. It takes cowardice to shut up because you might not get your pension. You know, who cares? Who cares? 3,000 of your fellow beings were murdered with action at a distance weaponry on that day. And you're content to be quiet because you worry about your pension. Yeah, that makes you a real good person.
Yeah, right.
I wanted to say something, you know, for the listeners listening to this and anybody who knows Mark or doesn't know Mark, you know, I know a lot of people who get very quote unquote offended when they hear this rise in this tone where the rhetoric starts to come out and you hear this roaring emotional person, and That's the sound of someone who's very real, who really does care. And people want to say like, oh, you shouldn't, you know, be raising your voice or talking like that. And it really drives me crazy to see so many people just knock the messenger without actually listening to what the person's really saying and why they're saying it the way they do. I was wondering if
you know
could...
what that is, Nate? That, you know what that is? That's a mind control technique. That is exactly what that is. The people who think that are under mind control. If you think someone saying something passionately and emotionally that is true, that somehow that message should be discounted because they're saying it in a fired up way, you are under mind control. And you were put under that mind control to believe this falsity by Satanists. Satanists taught you that. You don't even understand that Satanists taught you that. They taught you that through the school system. They taught you that through the media. They're in charge of all those organizations. That's how they taught you that. Their men and women in the point positions in those organizations carried out the agenda to make you believe that nonsense. That's what happened in your past and is still going on in your present. You were emotionally mind controlled into believing that only people saying things in a very pleasant, equal, you know, tone, you know, in a pleasant tone that is very even keeled can be speaking the truth. And that's not true, because that's what liars will do. Liars on the mainstream media will deliberately act in totally calm and perfect pleasing voices and say it to you so nicely, but they're still blowing smoke up your ass. They're still lying right to your face. They're still peeing on you and telling you it's raining. You know, it doesn't mean nice people can be total liars and good people can be not so nice people. You know, we have to stop trying to equate nicety and goodness, right? I'm not a very nice person. Not a very nice person these days. I'll be the first to tell you. I'm fed up with people who are low lives, cowards, ignoramuses, who are condoning slavery, condoning violence. I'm fed up with it. I'm fed up with living in this world. Okay? So I'm not very nice about it anymore. I was nice about it for almost 15 years. I was nice about it. Saying this to people. You try saying the same thing for 15 years of your life like a damn broken record and see how nice you are after 15 years of people not only not getting it, but reverting backwards, going backwards. We were in better shape 15 years ago. We're going backwards instead of forward. You see how nice you are after doing that, after taking just about everything else out of your life and only doing that practically obsessively for 15 years. Then see how nice you are. Then come talk to me about it when you've done it at my level for the amount of time I did it. Then I'll accept criticism. Okay? Beyond that, I don't want any criticism because you haven't done what I've done. You haven't done what I've done with the intentions that I've done it with, quite frankly. Okay? So I'll listen to people's criticism when you have done as dedicatedly and as passionately as what I have done for the amount of time I've done it. Then you got room to talk. Until then, I'm not interested. I don't care what anybody has to say about that either. You know? So the whole point is, the people who think that just because somebody gets riled up can't be speaking the truth or shouldn't be listened to, you're under mind control. That's a mind control technique. They conditioned you to think that. The dark occult conditioned you to think that way. And because you continue to think that way, they're still getting away with what they're getting away with.
I appreciate you telling us what your perspective on that and how you really feel, because it is something that I am dealing with all the time, and it's so frustrating because it's like, oh, I don't want to listen to anyone who is raising their voice. And I understand. I get like, okay, you know, there's no need to raise your voice for this or that, but there, you know, not to take away what you were saying earlier about the, you know, these people not speaking up and not being cowards and standing up for all these innocent people that were, you know, ritualistically murdered in this 9/11, you know, it's like someone's got to stand up and say something. And when they do, you're going to feel it. You're going to really feel it from them, because they're so upset.
You know what they don't care about? You know what the people you're talking about don't care about? They don't care about injustice taking place. Yeah. The only time they care about if injustice takes place is if it happens to them. Then they'll get angry, you know? But they don't care when injustice happens to other people. That's why they're bad people. Right. That's why bad things are continuing to happen to them and everybody else, because most people have that attitude that I don't care about if injustice takes place as long as it's not happening to me. That's called being a bad person. Mm-hmm. That's what being a bad person is. You know what it's like? People say, somebody raising their voice, oh, I can't listen to that. You know what that's like? Picture two slaves on a plantation, and one is raging about being kept as a slave. I can't believe these people don't see the immorality in what they're doing. I can't believe all the other people condone it. All the other people living around here condone it and let it go on and don't try to stop them. Imagine if one slave on the plantation was raging about that and angry, so righteously justified about it, and the other slaves were going, man, why do you got to raise your voice? Could you imagine? Just put it in the perspective of that. That's what we are in. Mm-hmm. That's what we are in. We are saying this is wrong. It shouldn't be allowed to continue with passion. And other people are saying, I don't want to listen to you because you raised your voice. They don't even care about what's right. What do you think that's going to do? Make me calmer? That's going to make me calmer? Showing how much under mind control you are, that you're only concerned about, you only even listen to a message if it's said calmly. The house is on fire, ladies and gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
Get out of the head cage. Get out of the mind control. Don't worry about how a message is delivered. Worry about whether it's true or not.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Hear the message. Don't pay attention to the messenger or the delivery mechanism or vehicle, you know. Get to the meat and potatoes. Get to the actual substance, you know? That's what you got to do. Otherwise, you're falling prey to what I refer to as emotional mind control. And so many people are under emotional mind control, and they were put there by the sorcerers of the world. They were put there by the dark occultists. This is one of the techniques that they know. That's why they made the news broadcasters do that technique with their voice. They made them do these sweet and pleasant tone all your life so that you say, well, that's the news, Owen, that's what's true. You equated what's new with what's true as well. That's another mind control technique. But you also equated that with they're calm and they're even and they're calm and they never get upset and they just say it. Yeah, because they're paid actors.
Mm-hmm.
Those are paid actors. They're not journalists. They're people who are paid to lie to you. That's it. So they could put on whatever air they want. They could pretend to be a comedian. They could pretend to be a drama person. They could pretend to be the most calm, even-keeled person in the world. It's an act. That's not their real personality. There's no part of their real personality coming through. This is who I am. I'm real. I'm not pretending to be anybody else. You don't like it? I don't care. You know, I'm me. I like who I am. And that's all that matters to me, because I'm in the right and I'm a good person. I'm not a person who pretends to be a good person. I'm a person who is a good person. I don't harm anybody. I don't condone other people's harm. I don't condone slavery. I do get upset when injustice takes place around not just myself, but other people. You know, that's what a good person is. I know the difference between right and wrong behavior objectively and truly. And I choose right over wrong objectively and truly. You know, that's what makes someone a good person. Not the sound of their voice. Not if they raise their voice. Not if they use profanity. You know, not if they have any other vices. What makes a good person is they don't do harm to other people. They don't initiate harm to other sentient beings. And they don't condone that harm is initiated to other sentient beings. You know, you live like that and then you're a good person. Most people don't live like that. Say, oh, this person has the right to go and do that, or I'll take a paycheck to do that. You know, they're not interested in really not doing harm. They're interested in harm not coming to them. Mm-hmm. But if it involves somebody else, who cares whether harm's being done to them or who cares whether I'm doing it? That's how most people think. You know, as long as enough money's involved, who cares? You know, so I'm not the one under mind control. I'm the one trying to disrupt the mind control. I'm not the dark evil occultist. I'm the Dio occultist who's a whistleblower, who's doing the right thing by telling the truth. You know, so if you don't like my delivery, go hear it from someone else. But guess what? What I said is still the truth. And nothing could ever change that.
Okay, guys, we are at our second break and we appreciate you tuning in. We'll see you on the other side. Okay, guys, we are back, and this show has just been amazing. So we're going to go ahead and start right where we left off. I keep hearing you say the name or the god Mammon. The people who follow this god Mammon they're called Mammonists. Is that correct?
Oh, I guess Mammonists or Mammonites, you know, and that's really almost everybody in the world is a Mammonite. That's the real God, because Mammon is biblically the God of money. You know, he represents money. He represents the state of consciousness in which you would simply do something that is knowingly a wrong behavior to someone else for enough money. And that makes almost everybody in the world a Mammonite, because almost everybody has that price. You know, there was a professional wrestler back 20 years ago called the Million Dollar Man. He had a phrase, everybody has a price for the Million Dollar Man. And he would get people to do these ridiculous tasks. He would, you know, get them to humiliate themselves if offered, you know, $1,000. And he'd get them to do all these tasks, you know, and then turn to the camera and say, everybody has a price, you know, and it's very true. It's very true, sadly. It shouldn't be that way, but it's true. Almost everybody, it's not everybody, I'd say it's almost everybody, has a price that whereby if they were offered enough money, they would do something that is harmful. And in biblical terms, this is called worshiping the god called Mammon, because it said that you cannot serve two masters. You can't serve the god of creation, who puts forward the laws of the universe, namely natural law, which are the karmic laws of behavioral consequence, the laws of morality. You cannot serve the God that created the laws of morality and the laws of the universe, the God of creation, and simultaneously serve Mammon. That's what it says biblically. And nothing could be truer. That is complete truth. It is an impossibility to serve money and to only worry about your financial situation and still serve the God of creation and obey natural law. Because natural law doesn't care about what your paycheck is. It doesn't care about whether you make money that day, week, month, year, or not. Natural law only says this is what is good, this is what is right. It doesn't care about what the world situation is that has pushed you into a corner to say, I got to make up my mind about whether I want to have money to eat next week or whether I want to do the right thing. Natural law does not care about that. And it's cold and it's impersonal. There is the right thing, then there is the thing you could do for money. And wonderful and great if you could find something that where they align, where you are doing the right thing and making money. That's the optimal situation. But not every situation that a human being finds themselves in can they do both of those simultaneously. So the real cold answer, okay, that isn't what people want to hear, but it's what I'm going to tell them because I'm not here to tell you what you want to hear. I'm here to tell you the truth. The real answer is sometimes you got to make the choice where you don't make any money and you're poor to do the right thing. Sometimes you got to quit your job to do the right thing. Sometimes you got to say, I'm not going to accept the payout of the God called Mammon, and I will struggle, and I might go hungry, and maybe my children might go hungry, but I'm still going to choose the right thing. How many people have that fortitude and constitution in their heart and mind? Hardly any. That's why we keep going deeper into bondage, because of all the excuses that are made where I have to do this because my paycheck depends on it. God doesn't care. I will say that. And you say, oh, you don't know what God wants. No, yes, I know that. The creator of the universe does not care whether you do the wrong thing just because you're paid money. All that force cares about is whether or not you do the right thing. The end. Okay? You want to make excuses, you can make them all you want. There's a billion different reasons why you could choose to do the right thing. It will never make it the right thing to choose. You see? You could continue to choose to do the wrong thing and make endless excuses. And it could always be about, oh, I have pet bills to pay. I have this, I have that. I have this many kids. They'll go hungry. I'll go hungry. The universe doesn't care. Doesn't care. You have to accept. Creation does not care about you in that capacity. It doesn't care how you got worked into a corner. All that it cares about is what your choice is. It doesn't say, well, he did the wrong thing and he condoned all this, you know, bad, evil action be done to other people. And he participated in all that bad, evil action just because someone else told him to do it and someone else put money in his paycheck because he thought this was all he could do, this was all she could do, and his child might have gone hungry if he stopped doing it. Do you think the creator of the universe is going to be gauging that situation and go, well, give him an excuse. He caused tremendous pain and suffering for hundreds of thousands of other people, but it was because he was making a paycheck and he couldn't decide not to do that because then that money would have dried up. Really? That's what you believe the God of creation says, thinks, does, etc. Really? You think it's that petty? You think the force that made all matter and all laws in all of creation is as petty as your mind? Yeah, sure. Sure it is.
Yeah, right.
So one thing and one thing only. What did you do? And you know what that means? That does mean what's in your heart. What's in your heart leads to what you did. You know, people go, oh, we had the right intentions. You just didn't make the right choice. Wrong. Intentions are meaningless. Action is everything. It doesn't make a difference whether you have all the intent in the world to do the right thing. If you choose the wrong thing, that was the expression of your heart. Period. 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 The end. The end. And it doesn't matter if you don't like it. That's the truth. See, I hit people with the hardcore truth. That's why I'm not popular like podcasters who talk about political nonsense bullshit who have millions of people following them because they're being told, oh, it's just all these politicians and we get the right person in there. Everything will be okay. No, that's what everybody wants to hear. They don't want to hear you're the problem. I'm the one out there pointing the fingers. You're the problem. See, I did this already. Already did and done. Did and done. Right? That doesn't mean I can't stand any improvement. Everybody can be improved. But I did this first. How am I complicit? How am I helping contribute to the problem? And I was contributing to the problem. Past tense. I was definitively contributing to problem. And I kept doing this over and over and over and over and over and over and over again until I stopped contributing to the problem. And now make sure you're not contributing to the problem anymore after you do this a billion times. Do this a billion times first, right? Then make sure you're not contributing to the problem. Then start doing this, right? Don't start doing this. See, now I'm doing this. And I admit I'm doing this. I'm pointing out there other people are the problem. I'm no longer the problem. I figured out how I was the problem, and I stopped. Past tense, fully stopped, okay? I'm not contributing to the problem anymore. So I'm out there saying now I stopped contributing to the problem. Here's how you can stop contributing to the problem, but you are still contributing to the problem by the way many people think. Absolutely still contributing to it. So you need to start doing this. You need, and other people, when they are no longer, see the idea in, again, biblical allegory, those who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. Well, I no longer live in the glass house. Okay, I moved on and built a solid foundation somewhere else and built a solid home elsewhere. So that's not my condition anymore. Once that's truly not your condition, then this is okay to do and say, you need to do this. It's true that you need to do this. You haven't worked on yourself. You haven't done that. You still live in the glass house. And it is true. Some people shouldn't be doing this, but some should. As long as they have confirmed they're not part of the problem anymore. And the part of the problem means you're not actively doing harm to other people. You're not condoning it. And you need to understand that government is a big part of that. Meaning, are you an anarchist? Do you truly believe that people should be free with no masters? Government is a master. Authority is a master. Do you believe that authority is an illusion? That authority is not vested in human beings? If you do believe that authority is real and is vested in human beings, you're a condoner of violence. Because that's what authority is. Authority is somebody saying, I'm better than you. I get the right to command you. And if you don't comply, I can send people. I could do harm to you, or I could send people to do harm to you. That's what authority is if you're being honest with yourself. Period. That's what it is. It's not what I think it is. It's what it really is. So the people who are doing that are, they are the problem. You need to point the finger at yourself and ask yourself, how am I still contributing to the harm that's going on in the world? How am I contributing to the problem? You know? So once you have stopped doing that truly and you're not really contributing to the harm in the world, you know, then start pointing the finger at other people and saying, well, you're still doing what I stopped a long time ago. You know, I stopped all that nonsense a long time ago. I stopped being a, you know, a person who is a naive child believing that I have the right to do those things a long, long time ago, years and years and years, and you're still doing them. So I have the right to say you shouldn't be doing those things. You know, don't tell me I don't have the right to raise my voice when I'm seeing the total murder and injustice all around me. Of course I do. As a matter of fact, the problem is most people haven't raised their voice. Most people haven't gotten in other people's face. We've been too nice. We have tolerated evil for too long just because we don't want to rock the boat and don't want a lot of tension and confrontation amongst ourselves around other people in society. That's not going to help or solve anything ever. That will not rocking the boat, not wanting to be noticed, not wanting people not to like us, you know, wanting people to like us is not going to solve this. Speaking the truth unapologetically to other people about what's really going on is what's going to solve the problem. And that really goes for the dominators, you know, and the people who should know better and are silent. You know, the people I want to really get on more than anybody else are the people who say that they know this stuff and aren't teaching it. That the responsibility for keeping the world the way that it is yours more than anybody else's. You know, that's the worst karmic position to be in. The worst karmic position you could possibly be in is saying, I know the truth about what's going on in the world, but I don't give a damn about people enough to come out and say it out in the open in public, you know, in a wide scale way on the internet. You know, because you're basically saying, I'm a coward. I don't want to rock the boat. I don't want people not to like me. I want to put on this facade, this mask, you know, and just be nice so that I don't encounter any confrontation. You know, I'm not interested in being non-confrontational. The truth is confrontational. The truth is confrontational because more people would rather do what is wrong than listen to the truth. and align their behavior with what is right. So, of course, speaking the truth to somebody is going to be a confrontational thing. You shouldn't expect it not to be. Why would anybody expect speaking the truth to be pleasant? Nobody wants to really hear what the truth is. They want escapism and pleasantry and niceness. Well, that's not what the truth is. The truth isn't escapism, pleasantry, and nicety. The truth is hard to hear. The truth is brutal. The truth is ugly. The truth is what you don't want to hear. You know, why did anybody, where do we even get that idea from? You know, where did that idea come from? The sweet and pleasant tones of the mainstream media. And you believing that that's what's telling us the truth and that's how it's done. That's mind control. That's what the mainstream media is there to do, to mind control you into a state of abject ignorance when it comes to matters of truth. You know, the CIA sorcerers of the dark occult saw to that by taking over the media a long, long, long time ago. You know, so, you know, that's the kind of mind control we need to get out of. You know, stop thinking that the truth is anything other than a battle. It's a battle. When you realize how bad the battle is going, it gets even worse because you realize how poor of a job people are doing presenting the truth to people. You know, how few of them it is. Some of the people presenting it do a great job. You know, like you guys have been doing this and doing an awesome job at it, you know, with this podcast. The point is how few people worldwide are doing something like this, anything like this. That's the problem. And that's the problem that needs to continuously be addressed. All the people out there within the sound of our voice, if you're listening and agreeing in any capacity, and then you're not putting it back out there for other people because you're so afraid to speak, you're part of the problem. You yourself are part of the problem if you are not speaking out. The truth has to be learned and then spoken. The universe is spoken into existence. We are going to get the result that we speak. What's stronger in its expression? The voice of truth being expressed through human beings or the voice of the lie being expressed through human beings? I think, once again, a five-year-old can answer the question correctly.
Yeah, I can't stand it when people are like, oh, you just want this situation to be true, and that's why you talk about it this way. And it's just like, you really think that I want human slavery to be running amok through the whole world? Are you absolutely insane? You know,
that's
like
a person who's just taking really bad drugs. I don't know, right? What taking, but stay away from it.
Yeah, no, well, yeah,
because anybody that thinks this is what we want to do, you guys are out of your
goddamn
minds. Took
the media
minds.
Drug.
If yeah. Purely out of your goddamn minds, you know? I just cannot believe that anybody would speak that to someone like us, you know? That shows you how brainwashed and crazy they must be.
Absolutely.
You know, that person is not mentally well, because for anybody to believe that this is what we prefer to do on a daily basis, believe, you know what? Can I tell you how mundane I really am? Can I tell honestly how mundane of a person deep down inside? Do you know what I really want to be doing right now instead of this? I want to go to the bowling alley, grab a beer, and bowl a few frames. That's what I want to do. That's what I like. That's what I enjoy. Okay? I don't care how mundane it sounds. That's what gives me earthly pleasure. I like to bowl. I could have been a professional champion bowler. I like sitting at a bowling alley drinking a beer and bowling. That's what I like. If I really were doing what I want to be doing, that's what I'd be doing. You know what? I like art. I always liked art. I want to learn how to paint. I suck at painting. I think I could be a good painter, maybe. Right? There might be a painter deep down inside Mark Passio. I don't know. I've never really taken the time to really try to express that. But guess what? I might, if I really took the time to do it, I might be able to express something like that and enjoy doing it. And I'm not doing that because I'm doing this crap, right? This is what I sacrificed in my life. See, being someone who lives the truth and tries to teach it to others means you sacrifice the time of your life to do that instead of doing other things that would bring you personal pleasure. This doesn't bring me any personal pleasure. This is a moral obligation, right? A moral obligation, you do it whether it brings you any personal pleasure or not. Especially if it doesn't bring you pleasure, you do it anyway because it's a moral obligation, right? Honestly, this doesn't bring me any pleasure. I've said it before. I've been very vocal and open about it. I'm kind of bitter about having to do it because there are so few people doing this work. And once again, some people will say, oh, well, that shouldn't be your attitude, Mark. You know, you don't know what I feel. You don't know what I've gone through. You don't know what I've experienced in life. You know, this is a hardship upon me. You know, this is something that I would rather not do. It's a hardship, you know. It's something that is brutal and torturous to me to wake up every day to do. And yet I still continue to do it anyway because I know it to be the right thing. And maybe I could tag out for a few years if there were millions of people doing what I do, but there's not. And in many cases, I'm the only person saying the things that I say the way that I say it. You know, I've never heard anybody rail on the firefighters in New York City, you know, the way I just did. In any podcast or in any documentary, because nobody's thinking of it from that perspective. You know, I'm going to make a presentation railing on software developers. I think software, the state of software, is in such a deplorable state in the year 2021 that if better software were developed that was freedom minded and freedom oriented, there might be more people influenced and inspired to do this type of work. But I think the software is so bad and software developers are in such a low vibratory state of consciousness that they're not even making tools that will help make it easier for people to speak the truth because they don't care because all they care about is a paycheck. You know, I'm going to make a presentation called The Satanic Mindset of Software Developers, because I think this is something that I feel is so important to the freedom movement, and hardly anybody even thinks about it. They never even express it or think about it because they don't understand how integral working with software on a daily basis is to doing this type of work. You know, and if easier tools were presented and given to the public, this might be a little less of a annoying, you know, brutal job to do. You know, I look at people even on the One Great Work Network, which I started last month, and I thought some of them were more technically inclined people, and some of them are, but guess what? It's not as many as I thought. A lot of people are just, you know, YouTube guys, make a video, throw it on YouTube, I'm done. You know, I thought people were more interested in building their own platforms and, you know, knew how to embed media and make, you know, documents and make, you know, do video editing and work with websites, et cetera. And it's hardly anybody, you know. I'm going to highly recommend in the next content creator meeting for the One Great Work Network to the content creators to take my How to Become the True Media seminar, which I gave to members of the public and some other people who I gave scholarships to last year. And I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to make it free for all for all One Great Work Network content creators. I'm going to offer free scholarships to all the content creators and they can attend and learn what's in the How to Become the True Media course if they want. You know, to the regular, to the other public, I will obviously, it will be a paid course, but I think for the purposes of the people who are already doing this work, I'm going to offer scholarships for all content creators for that course. So, you know, that's another thing I think that's needs awesome. To be done to mitigate things. We have to learn publishing technology. You know, a lot of the things people don't even consider is how is this information put out to the public? You know, well, if you don't know some form of publishing, you know, sorry to break the news to everybody, but chatting with your next door neighbor ain't going to get it done. You know, you know, your words leave your mouth and that's ephemeral, right? It leaves right. your mouth. It goes to their ear. They might or might not understand what you said. And that's it. That's the end of it. Where is it preserved? Where is it archived? Where is what you said preserved and archived for posterity? It's not. Almost every single word that I have ever said regarding everything that's taking place in the world, it has been digitally recorded and it's archived on one site that you have to go to or one library page, you know? LBRY, not meaning a physical library, the website, you know, where you could upload media library that's based on blockchain. You know, this is my point. Where are people archiving the wisdom that comes out of their mouth? You could speak wisdom and it could be gone in a puff of smoke. You know what I mean? The whole point is to really get the word out there to other people constantly on a continual basis. You have to archive it online. Otherwise, it's like, you know, it's the old adage, like, you know, pick or it didn't happen, right? Show me a photo or it didn't happen. Well, people saying, well, I talked to this person and that person. Point me to the URL where I could download it, or it didn't happen. Right? That's it. And for more people to be able to archive their, you know, perception of what is going on online, speak their version of the truth. There's only one truth, but everybody has a different perspective on it. To speak your perspective of the truth and put it online. You know, most people don't know how to do that. They do not know how to use modern publishing technology to put what they say on the internet. And a lot of people don't want to because they're cowards, because they look at it like, oh, that makes me a target. That paints a target on my back. Well, so what? I cast the die a long time ago when it comes to, I'm up against some of the biggest psychopathic murderers in the world. I don't care what they do. I don't care what they do to me. I don't care what they do to anybody I know, quite frankly. I mean, yeah, I would care. It would be not pleasant and not good if they harmed someone who was dear to me. But the whole point is that doesn't mean I'm going to stop speaking the truth. That's a real eventuality that could take place. But then guess what? Do your worst. Do your worst. It doesn't matter. You're not going to stop me till the day I die. I'm going to continue to speak the truth. That's what real courage is. And more people have to develop it. You got to speak it. You got to put it online. It's not good enough that you know it. It's not good enough you have an inkling. It's not good enough that you say it to your family members. It's not good enough you say it to your friends. It's not good enough you say it to your neighbors. That's in one ear, out the other in many cases, because most of those people aren't awake. That's here today, gone tomorrow. Right? Where can we hear what you said? Right? If I want to hear it, I don't know you. I'm a stranger. You never talked to me. And I want to hear your wisdom. I want to hear what you said. Where can I go and hear it? If you just say it to some person and it's gone, it's like you didn't say it. Right? So download link or it didn't happen. Right? URL or it didn't happen. Like pick didn't happen on social media. URL or it didn't happen. Okay? When it comes to all the people who say they're saying the truth out there to other people and trying to help. URL or it didn't happen. Web link or it didn't happen, mm-hmm. Period.
That'd be a good t-shirt or sticker design, actually.
Web link or it didn't happen.
Yeah, I like all that right. a lot.
That's it. Give me the web link or it didn't happen. Okay? And this is what we have to get into the mindset of all the people out there. You know, they think they're helping by saying something and then it's gone. You're not helping you will help infinitely more people if you don't bother saying it to the asleep neighbor. Get in front of your computer and record yourself saying it and upload it to the internet, and a million people can learn it. You know, why bother to say it to a hard
while we still can?
That may or may not get it. I'm not saying don't say it to them. I'm just saying that energy that you spent doing that, you could have recorded it and put it online. That's the real publishing work. It isn't to just say something that you know to somebody you think might get it. I'm not saying not to do that. Do that too. But formalize your understanding. Put it online. Then hundreds of thousands of people might learn it. So web link or it didn't happen. That's the takeaway.
Like it a lot.
Yeah, it always mind boggles me when I run into people who don't really understand how much work and due diligence goes into even setting up a podcast or setting up a website or understanding the publishing programs and things like that.
Right.
And then I try to educate them to that, you know, because I learned everything on my own when I started to do this, you know.
Right.
I went out the initiative to learn how to do these things because I know it was important. You know, I knew that, hey, I'm going to need to learn this to live in this world. If I want to do anything with what's going on, I need to know this technology. And it seems that people just do not want to learn, especially the more elder generations, or even just like the parents of like people like me or Nate, you know, they have no idea how to use any of this. And even when it comes to the younger kids, they do not want to learn how to, they want it all to be easy, right?
Yeah, they've been indoctrinated into this thing, the slab, fondle slab. Now, they all have the fondle slab, which will let you consume media, but creating it, it's a different story. You're not going to create much media on the fondle slab.
Absolutely. Yeah, you have to have a desktop at least to really, really have some power, you know, when you're trying to do any of this stuff.
I was showing people what it is to just, even other people interviewing me, like what's happening right now. I was recently interviewed by two other individuals. Patrick Smith interviewed me for Anarchapoco 2021, and Jay Parker interviewed me on his show, The Center Path, recently. And just the tasks of taking that interview, cropping it, you know, posting it to library, then you have to make an article on your own website and embed it from there and get the embed codes. It's like an hour process, you know, for each one. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you don't just hit a button. You don't hit the Siri button and go, Siri, do me a favor, put my two most recent interviews on my website for me. It doesn't work that way, right? It's a lengthy, laborious process of having to get the right text and links and put it in the HTML code the right way. If you're on your own website, you know, if it's part of a longer video, which my interview with Patrick was, you know, you got to get a video editor out and you got to crop the video to the right place. You know, it involves considerable amount of skill sets that you have to learn and then execute, you know. You know, I was just, you know, looking at how much is involved just in doing something simple like that. And that's not even you doing the media. That's somebody else doing it and just giving you the link for it, right? You already have, they already did the bulk of the work with the editing and then, you know, gave you the link, you know, just getting it onto your own site is a whole challenge and process in and of itself. But people don't see that. And it's because people aren't showing them that. They're not showing them the task of doing that, you know? So this is what I think more of which has to happen. The people who do understand basic publishing technologies in the modern world, namely internet publishing technologies, have to help people learn how to use that technology. And the software does have to become easier. You know, a lot of people think the web should stay as mystified as it is. All the different languages of the web, HTML5, JavaScript, PHP, you know, SQL, on and on, you know, the average person doesn't care about that. They don't want to know about that. The web should be as easy as publishing a document in Microsoft Word or making a PDF from a word processing tool. Okay, that's how easy the web should be, but we haven't made it that easy. Developers will not make it that easy because you know what the mindset they're in? I don't care about what that person has to say or publish. I know how to do this. Plenty of other people don't. That puts me in a position of power where I can make a lot of money because this is a super mystified thing and a lot of people don't know how to do it. Therefore, my paycheck goes up. Mm-hmm. You know what that's called? That's called Satanism. That's what Satanism is. Satanism is, I don't care about what happens with other people as long as I'm doing okay. Satanism is, well, if a very enlightened individual who knows nothing about technology doesn't know how to publish this, oh, well, I'm getting paid, right? They don't care about helping the world. They care about where the most money that could be made by them is at. That's what Satanism is. This is why I have to do the presentation, the satanic mindset of software development, of software developers, because they're all in that mindset, almost every one of them. Very few care about the human condition. Very few are trying to put easy-to-use tools in people's hands so that people can speak the truth out to a worldwide audience. Most people only care about their own situation, only care about their God mammon and how much money they make doing what they do that few other people understand today, unfortunately. The web needs to be demystified and needs to be taken into an area where it's easy to use as a web, as a word processing tool. That's it. And we're nowhere near that, unfortunately.
Well, we have definitely went over the 2-hour mark. And but if you guys want to continue on for a little longer, I'm cool with that. If you guys are,
I mean, I think putting the word out there that publishing, learning how to be a publisher, learning how to be what I call the new media is probably a nice place to leave it, because that places the responsibility firmly where it needs to be at, and where the responsibility should be at is the people within the sound of our voice who are listening to this and watching this. And if you say you understand, that's not the end. That's the beginning. The beginning is understanding this. The end is I'm going to get involved and I'm going to try to influence other people's minds. That's the hardest thing that there is to do. The hardest thing that there is to do in the world is helping someone else change their perspective on something that they formerly thought they were correct about, but were not. That is the hardest thing that there is to do in the world. And I'll say that again. The hardest work in the world that there is to do is helping someone else to change their mindset and their perspective about something that they believe they already knew the truth about, but were wrong about, because they have this ego invested that they already know and they don't know. They're incorrect. And they have to make the mental recognition when they get more information that, oh, I was wrong about this. Now I need to admit to myself and to others I was wrong about it, change my perspective, and then live in harmony with the truth, and then teach that truth to other people as well. Because everybody who's wrong isn't teaching the truth to other people. At the worst, they're teaching what's wrong to other people, right? All the people in the world who are wrong, all the people in the world who believe in government, not only are they not teaching the truth to people about the illegitimacy of authority and the human condition is slavery, they're not doing that. But in addition to not doing that, they're also teaching people, in many cases, if they're very vocal, all the wrong things to propagate it down to the next generation of people. So they're doing double harm. Not only are they not helping put the truth out there, they're spreading falsities and lies that are harmful, you know, to other people's mindset and behavior. So we have to reach those people. We have to reach the people who think they're right but are wrong. And there is a truth about that, and it is able to be discovered. You use the trivia method to discover the truth. Then you start attempting to influence other people. You put it out there, you teach, and you influence other people to change their minds. Folks, if I never did that and I just stayed saying, oh, well, I think I have the truth now, I admitted to myself that I was wrong in the past, and then I never did anything else with it, look at all the people that I have helped change their mindset and influence for the better in the world that would have never, possibly would have never changed on their own, you know? Maybe they would have if they come into contact with someone else that was putting out the same information, but many people may not have, you know? So never underestimate your own power or capability. You have power within yourself to help influence change. The point is you have to be courageous and start doing it. So I think that's a good place to leave it. It's all about our own personal courage and willpower. Get active. Get out there. If you hear what we're saying is true, get out there and put it out there yourself. Learn the technology and put it out there for other people to hear.
So true. And so,
and gentlemen, that's what you guys have
done. Sorry.
Absolutely. No, it's okay. That's what you guys have done. This is what you're doing, right? You know, you got the information and you acted on it. Getting it was the first part. That's not the end. That was your beginning. Then you're acting on it. You're putting presentations out there. You're putting podcasts out there. You're putting videos out there. This is what the great work is to do. You guys are an example. You're an inspiration for others, you know? And being on the One Great Network, we can amalgamate all these great teachers and purveyors of truth and help get it out there to people in one condensed area. That's what OneGreatWorkNetwork.com is all about. So check out my main website, What on Earth is Happening. Listen to the podcast in order. Don't skip around. It's a stepwise progression. And then check out all the great content creators' work at OneGreatWorkNetwork.com, the new network that we launched last month. So once again, Nate and Brandon, thank you so much for bringing me on to Cubbyhole Podcast. I think you guys asked phenomenal questions. And I want to thank you for the work that you guys continue to do. It's what really a lot of other people should start doing. And you guys are an inspiration. So thank you.
Thank you.
Indeed. Thank you very much, Mark.
It's been amazing, more than I expected on this show. And, you know, you're beyond an inspiration for me and Brandon and, you know, Douglas for sure, and you know, many other people. And
I appreciate just, that, guys. Thank you.
It's just what blows my mind is like how much work I've done, and then there was a time in one of your last or one of your episodes, maybe 10 or 15 episodes back, where you asked people to draw a Bruce Lee sidekicking a little baby in a high chair.
And to show the power differential through the knowledge differential. The dark occult are like a master martial artist fighting a child.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. It's very unfortunate. But that is the power differential that exists. You know, we have a master tactician, and he's fighting someone who's, you know, drooling at a high chair. You know, and it's sad, but that's the kind of gap we have to make up. You know, we have to make that gap up. And, you know, there's a chasm there in knowledge that if the people who know what's going on get over this fear of speaking out, maybe we'll, you know, that chasm can be not so wide. Maybe we can make it narrower, or maybe we could make it not so deep. But right now, that's the power divide. The power differential is that wide, you know? Yeah, it's like a sumo wrestler, you know, a huge 600-pound sumo wrestler pushing around, you know, somebody who's, you know, in a wheelchair and it weighs 75 pounds, you know? That's the kind of ease with which these occultists are manipulating people right now because of their level of knowledge and how ignorant the public is. But with the public's help, if people awaken and then activate, see, awakening is just, we spend too much time on, oh, is he awake? Am I awake enough? Like, once you get the basic understanding of freedom and that government is slavery and that authority is an illusion, start putting it out there formally. Start making presentations, making podcasts, putting it out there, explaining why it's morally wrong and inconsistent with people's belief that they're a moral human being. Show them their, you know, cognitive dissonance, you know, show them where they're saying one thing, but really their thoughts betray that, you know, they betray what they say that they are. Nobody who's truly a good person down deep inside in their mind and heart can truly believe that the coercion, enslavement, and violence of government is morally right. It's a contradiction in terms. We have to, in simple terms, make people understand that. But that they're not going to understand that unless people put the work out there for them to consider. You know, more media needs to be created, and it needs to be everywhere. What's more omnipresent in society? The lies of the mainstream media, or the few truths that are spoken in the alternative media? Once again, I think it's very easy to see and gauge. So we need a lot more media created. We need more content creators. We need more teachers.
Agreed. I just wanted to say that I took you up on that idea that you had of Bruce Lee, and then I drew it. And it's funny because the way that I look at you and your work, sometimes I feel like that little baby in the high chair, even with all that I know. So sometimes I feel like, you know, and I need that. I need that. I'm saying this in a very healthy way. I always look at, you know, people who I admire and are inspiring as giants that I'm sitting on their shoulder. And I really appreciate knowing that where the work is that I need to do. And, you know, sometimes I speak on things and then not that I, am ever at a place where I don't really know what I'm talking about, but maybe I don't have all the details of it. And, then I run into someone who's very detailed in their research. And that's why I feel that way sometimes, where I am the little baby getting sidekicked by Bruce Lee, you know? So.
Well, the comparison, I can make the same comparison to people that I learned from, you know. I mean, you know, looking into the work of David Icke, look at how prolific he is. Look at the work of Jordan Maxwell and how much he has put out over the years, Michael Tessarion, etc. I mean, there are so many great teachers out there. Manly P. Hall. I mean, look at his proliferous works, you know. So we all tend to do that as, you know, the generations continue. And, you know, that's how we proliferate and preserve human knowledge. And that's how we really preserve knowledge about morality and natural law. I mean, that's what has to be done is, you know, look at other people's work and then build upon it, you know, help to spread that work as well, but then build upon it ourselves. And I love to see that that's what you guys are doing. And I hope that you guys will keep it up. And I hope that other people will take that example and take that ball and run with it. So once again, thank you for the work that you do. And thank you for highlighting mine here today on Cubbyhole.
I appreciate that, Mark. Brandon, I think he had something he wanted to say before we get off here.
Sure.
Go ahead, Brandon.
Yeah, I want to ask if you would mind putting a plug in for your upcoming presentation at the Seed Conference.
Sure. Seed is coming up. The dates are May, 14th through 16th?
Yes.
14th through 16th, 2021. It's going to be a virtual conference. I believe it's going to be hosted on the Zoom collaboration, software. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you're offering this as a free open meeting for people?
Yes, completely. That's awesome. Free for people.
Okay. So May 14th through 16th, it's called Seed 4, okay? And Brandon is the host of the event, and I'm going to be speaking at it at this virtual conference. My presentation that's coming up as part of Seed 4 is called Fake Ass Anarchists. And what I'm going to be doing is breaking down the people who say that they are anarchists, but really their behaviors, their mindset and their behaviors don't truly align with what I consider to be real anarchy. It's anarchy in name only, because when you really look at what underlies some of their belief systems and behaviors that they enact and condone, it isn't really true freedom. It's still you could call it a cul-de-sac. It's still something that is going to hold people back from a true state of freedom by creating some form of a control system. So fake-ass anarchists coming up as part of Seed 4, May 14th through 16th. That is the presentation I will be delivering. There'll be a ton of other great speakers that have been invited to participate in the event. So check it all out. Brandon, you can give them the website.
Yeah, the website will be cubbyhole.com. So that's CubbyWhole.com. You can find all the information there. And we're really looking forward to having you on there, Mark.
I'm looking forward to presenting it. I think it's going to be great. I'm really glad that you're giving the virtual event for free. I think that's very generous of you with all the work, even just to coordinate something like that. And I think people will get a lot out of it.
Yeah,
so
I really
thank
appreciate
you.
It too, Brandon.
Absolutely.
Was there anything else you wanted to add, Brandon, before we go?
Nope, that's it.
Okay, cool. Well, Passio, I hope that one day we will, maybe in another lifetime, we'll be playing some, we'll go bowling and have a beer together.
anytime, yeah. Anytime. Forget another lifetime. We need to do that soon in this one.
I hear you, man. Right? I would love that. But much agape to you, man. It's a true pleasure. Well, guys, this episode is at its end, and we hope you found clarity and value in this show today. And you can find more shows, presentations, and news at cubbyhole.com. That's CubbyWhole.com. And plus, you can find more of our work, Douglas Martin's, Brandon's, and my work with other fellow light builders, such as Mark, who actually built the website with Leah and a few others, onegreatworknetwork.com. And that place is just filled with amazing information regarding natural law and freedom. Also, please make sure to keep your eyes out for the next show, as I will be going further into the methods of manipulation, especially elaborating on chaos sorcery, which Mark has really raised the bar here. So, and he already has in his other presentations and podcasts. So I'm just going to give what I see that hasn't really been said yet, and it should be really great content. So definitely tune into that. And as for now, a new show comes out every Friday at 12 p.m. Pacific time. So stay tuned for more. And if you have any questions regarding the topics for these shows or the Seed for Growth event, please email us at cubbyhole@mail.com. That's cubbyhole@mail.com. Also, any donations are appreciated, as anything that's given will go directly to the Cubbyhole website. Just hit the donation button on the website, and it's set up pretty easy to operate from there. So we really appreciate anything. And thanks to those who already have donated. So, okay, guys, I'm your host, Nate Kapp. Thank you for listening. And remember, do no harm, defend truth, and keep transcending dogma.